everyone. Welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is our 26th episode or something. We're trying to roll along with once a month, whether it's an interview or a group chat. And, we are here with a normal, average, everyday group chat where we're going to try and catch up on what we are feeling passionate about at the moment. We do have a couple of other things to share with you later, but we wanted to catch up basically, and as the summer goes on, catch up more because this year has been very hard, so it's nice to have friends to talk to. So my friends to talk to today are Brittany and Mitchell. Hi, guys. Hello. How are you feeling?
Wonderful.
I never heard you call Mitchell, but I like it. It's fine.
I can call you Mitchell if you want to.
We're getting into names already. Call me by Mitchell, please.
I'm saying that as a pun.
Call me, okay. Yes, thanks.
Well, yeah. I'm Natalie. This is a podcast that we have to talk about things in depth that we care about. That's basically it. If you've never tuned in before, we're called Not About the Weather because we are skipping the small talk of life. I sound very morose. I don't know why, but that's fine. I'm so tired. Yes. If you want to reach us, we do hope to proceed in a more regular fashion. We've got a few things to share coming up. In terms of people, guests that we've talked to in depth, I have a long chat with our great author, Britta London, who is keen to, talk about her book about shipping, which we covered on Hyperball, and we've got a few things to share, but we also have our beautiful group of friends who I feel like the reason that this has been, like, that everything's been weighing down so much and then now it's not, is that we're finally not doing Buffy on Rewatchable. I feel like this is like I feel like this is like a huge life change. And
Is it?
I don't know. Grinding me down. And I'm like, I just can't. It was just giving me like not a lot of space to produce, especially with podcasting, to produce other shows. And like,
yeah,
for some reason it was just such an mountain to climb, and because it was like there was like parts of it that were getting annoying, it was like I wouldn't watch it and then I'd have to like catch up 8 episodes in a row instead of like making time to do another show or write another article. And I don't know, Buffy rewatchable was grinding me down, and now it's over and it's like I feel like I have like a lot more free time, even though we're still doing Rewatchable for Sense8. I don't know. It's very strange.
I agree, though. I feel the exact same way. I feel like without Buffy, it just like the whole world, I can see the world again and all the potential. But I'm still doing the same amount of work. In fact, I was on Rewatchable 3 weeks in a row. I had double the amount of time.
I know. It's so weird. Anyway, that's good news, hopefully, if you've missed us doing our complete nonsense, because we have more energy to make complete nonsense because Buffy hasn't oppressed us anymore. And
I think you have to say that maybe I'm just crazy, but it feels like being a super fan is more exhausting and rewatchable because now I'm into Sense8 and you two get to just be whatever. But Brittany was a super fan for Buffy.
No, I was not.
I was a super
fan. No, I meant to say newbie. I said the word super fan. Brittany was a newbie for Buffy, and so was I. So I felt fine during Buffy, but maybe it's just depending on your love and or hate of the show. If it's too strong, it takes over.
We're doing one episode a week for Sense8 as well, which is like a game changer. And I'm so glad that we're not doing two.
And another thing, though, too, is there is Saeed Jones is live tweeting his – like he's just watching season 5 and 6 right now
of Buffy.
Yes. Of Buffy, and he's live tweeting himself watching it with the hashtag late Buffy. And I have been enjoying it so much. Like, I think I really loved season 5 and season 6, and he is just...
I love 5 and 6.
He's just, like, speaking everything that I couldn't eloquently say on the podcast, even though I was feeling it, because I think I was just so exhausted by the time we were there. But he is opening my eyes to how much I really, really loved season 5 and 6 of Buffy, because reading his tweets, I'm like, oh my god, I love that episode. I love what they did here. I love this. And he hates Xander, so it's like really helpful. It's so good. So
we can never do a show that long again.
Yeah, like, I'm really never, like, that was a lot. Remembering that I did like it.
Well, that's good. Yeah, anyway, yeah,
it is good.
So that's
hindsight is 20/20.
That's yeah. So if you want to catch up with us on another show that we do, which where we rewatch entire series, where it is a group of super fans and a group of newbies, as you may have picked up, we just completed a huge several year project of Buffy and Angel, and that got really. Got really intense by the end, and we're now we finished that, and now we're doing Sense8, which is a great show as well, and for some reason not so emotionally draining. Maybe it is for Mitch if you're staying up rewriting the lyrics to songs for the introduction, but yeah. So I feel like I have all of this free time, and that I'm not. You know, and that so we're going to be producing more balanced content, hopefully. Anyway, if you want to join us on social media specifically about this show, you can reach us on at NATW Podcast on Twitter. And we have an account on Instagram, Facebook. It's also our Gmail, NATWpodcast at gmail.com. So that is where you can reach us on social media or reach out to us in email form. We'd love more. We'd love to talk to people there and get into the habit of basically talking about all the things we talk on the show, on the internet as well, like all of the things that we are making a hype about and making a gripe about. There's so many more than we can fit in one episode. So it's definitely a space to do that and recommend things and complain about things, basically, if you do like our shows. The website, notaboutthewetherpodcast.com, which you can also follow as a Tumblr account, is where you can see each episode and the show notes. Our past episodes, we've got some great themed episodes about within our group, and we've got some great interviews where we talk in depth with some of the other people we you know, like to speak to in this industry of entertainment. And you can join us there as well and see if there's any episodes that leak out to you. But yes, the basic concept of the show is that we're going to bring to the table a thing that we are really stoked about at the moment and a thing that we are kind of having a bit of a negative time balancing at the moment. So we call this a hype and a gripe, or an obsession to share and a grievance to air. So we've all got one this week, and it's going to be pretty run-of-the-mill. Everyone's got one. We're going to talk about why. Hopefully you'll either have some commiserations or you'll have some new stuff to think about. So how do we want to go first this week?
Let's gripe.
You're like, I'm ready. So, okay, we've got gripes. We're going to go negative and then end on a positive. So who wants to start?
Well, mine's about Buffy, so I guess that's pretty
okay,
fitting.
Yeah, let's do that. So, Brittany, take it away with your gripe of the week.
So my gripe this week came out of, like, Comic-Con and just TV announcements in general for – the first thing that a studio will put out in front of people to rip apart without all of the information. And this one in particular stems out of the so-called Buffy reboot that the news came out that they're going to basically what was the amount of information that was released and was reported on basically said, we're redoing Buffy. But the keyword was keeping the word Buffy there, and that it was going to be casting a black woman, which great, super pumped. But what the mainstream media took away from it, because not much was said, is that it's going to be Buffy again. And so, of course, the initial reaction is, you can't redo Buffy. You know, like, no matter who's cast in it, it'll never top Sarah Michelle Gellar. And then, you know, you have the other people who are saying, like, no, they can do it, but, you know, like, they can tackle issues that Buffy couldn't tackle at the time because they didn't exist. And finally, literally 3 days ago.
Yeah, it took a while. The new showrunner.
Yeah, Monica Owusu-Breen. She's the one who is going to be the new showrunner and writing it. She released a statement that it's going to be a 20-year later sequel with a new Slayer. And that made more sense. So I purposefully did not jump on Twitter, did not say anything about the show to anyone, because I had a feeling that it wasn't what the media was reporting on. And it became a huge mess. And, you know, everyone was either thrilled that Joss was involved or miserable that he was involved. And, you know, there was one line in the statement that was like, oh, we're taking the comics into consideration. And so was it actually just going to be that there was just going to be a Black Buffy? No, now there's going to be a new Slayer, which is exactly what I was hoping for and something that I would actually be into, as opposed to them, you know, trying to make them. We saw that they tried to do
the same character.
Yeah, exactly. Like Angel and Buffy, the shows couldn't even exist in the same universe. How are you going to reboot Buffy with Buffy in the same universe? Like, it just, it didn't work keeping the character of Buffy even in a show that was filmed probably 20 minutes away. So, yeah, I just don't understand why. I get that you want to make noise with an announcement, but have all the details. Like, just, you're a big major corporation. You're going to be spending and pouring a lot of money into development of a new show. Why don't you get the right facts out there,
like,
first?
Don't have to course correct. Like, you know, when you're making the announcement.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Make it right. Yeah.
And so, of course, everyone's like, why is this happening? Why? And then finally, you know, when you hear from the showrunner responsibly saying, like, there's only one Buffy, one Xander, one Willow, one Giles, Cordelia, et cetera, they can't be replaced. And then she has to say, and, like, you know, you're putting this showrunner in a horrible position to write, like, no, I'm not going to ruin the thing you love. I'm trying something new within the universe. And that's fine. Like, that is completely fine. I'm into it. I'm actually, because I will be several years, probably two at most, removed from Buffy at that point, I'll be ready. You know, Spike might still be alive. Who knows? I feel like he's scrappy enough to survive that end of Angel ambiguity.
Imagine if it was like, because James Masters is actually one of the only people I did listen to, because his Twitter is, like, so positive and sweet.
Yeah.
And he was, like, very excited and just saying really nice things. And I was like, oh, this is cute.
Yeah, and he, like, retweeted her comments being like, listen, this is going to be great.
And you know, he said, holy crap, you know, Buffy's getting a reboot. Awesome. Black teen Buffy. Cool. Joss is producing. Thank God. So many exclamation marks. Empowering the female youth.
Well, he's older now, so.
Spectacular. 3 exclamation marks. Personally, I hope that the new show retains the message, don't give up. Not on yourself. Not on the world. What do you think? And all of these people are being like, no, James. Oh. And I'm like, leave him alone. This is so sweet. But what if, like, because he's always like, no, like, I can't redo Spike now. Like, after I finish Angel, I'm like, 7 years, I'm going to age out of it. And I've aged out of it. But what if, like, he found a way to be human? Like, I don't know if they're going to follow.
Oh, that would be sweet.
I don't know if
Anthony Stewart,
like,
Head could come back.
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to, like, hashtag the comics, you know? Like, I don't know if they're going to pick it up. Like, I don't know how much canon they're going to count, like, in terms of Buffy, you know, where the show Buffy ended and where those characters ended, if it's a continuation in the same universe or if it's going to be a new thing with the concept of a Slayer. Like, is it going to continue in the same universe or that the Buffy world existed that could feature cameos from the old cast, you know, say 20 years on? And if so, like, maybe Spike found a way to finally become human and him and Sarah Michelle Gellar could co-star together as, like, this pathetic, domestic, adorable.
She still looks so good, though. Like, James has also aged beautifully, but
he's got
Sarah Michelle Gellar
nice...
could play herself still. She looks so good.
They're all... Yeah, so I feel like it's definitely... You know, if you're doing that, if you're opening up that world, definitely do same universe so you have the opportunity to bring in those guest stars. But if it is like Slayer mythology with a new Slayer, is it going to be one girl in all the world? Because we know that that's not the Slayer's reality anymore, given the end of Buffy. Or is it...
Or did something happen that...
Yeah, or is it a total... reboot, but the Slayer is new characters in the same way that they rebooted One Day at a Time with a family that the family isn't the same names as the original family in the old One Day at a Time or something like that, you know, like, so there's a lot of options here, but could be interesting, but misinformation is a bitch, so I don't know, it's
yeah,
really...
And I think too it's the nature of the time we live in, like, information spreads so quickly and people are so quick to react that it just drives me crazy that they couldn't announce this better. Like, I don't know.
Was
or
it just
maybe
someone
they
in a panel, like, saying something off, like, was it just, like, said offhand in a panel? Like, I don't understand how this even got revealed.
That's a great question. I can look that up because I don't remember exactly. I read the news article when it came out. And then, but then immediately it was like reaction pieces to why shouldn't this happen? Oh, it's happening because XYZ. I have no idea.
Yeah, it could. I think it could be really good. Correct information from the jump would be great. You know, that'd be a great thing to have. So, yeah, having to make all these, no, guys, no, we didn't mean this, like, statements later on is kind of not the best circumstance to start with. Like, Anyway.
Yeah, it was just a deadline release.
Yeah, Deadline may have dug that up. Like, a few things that come out on Deadline are, like, someone from the mailroom leaked a sentence and it's not the correct information at all, you know, so it's kind of like they jumped the gun on it. It's not, like, an official press release on their terms, so that might be a part of it as well. So sometimes, like, if it's Deadline has learned – then it was not necessarily on the people's terms, so maybe they didn't have the correct information all locked in to release, and then they had to scramble to be like, no, guys, it's not, it is true, but it's not what you think, which is.
And I mean, maybe that might eventually work in someone's favor, though, because then it's like, oh, look at all this hype that's built around it.
Yeah.
Now we have it, but it was just so annoying.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
But looking forward to more of that happening in the future, because I'm sure it will with, like, revival, reboot heaven that's happening right now. For better and worse. Like, I mean, I feel like shows set in a Buffy universe or even Star Trek lend themselves to, okay, there's enough space in this sandbox to create new stories. But the shows that are trying to dive back into the original very tightly contained boxes aren't working as well. My beloved Will and Grace included. It's getting there. But it's
what network?
Like, what network for what? See, that's the thing. It's not even written. It's not even sold.
Right. What network do you imagine? It's not, I don't think it's safe in the CW. It probably will end up there.
What, for Buffy?
Yeah. I'm
curious.
I thought
it was Fox.
Do you think they...
I thought it was 20th Century Fox who was the studio.
Yeah, 20th Century Fox is the studio, but they could still sell it.
But they
it.
Might not. Yeah, they could sell it elsewhere, so...
Because whoever's doing Ash versus the Evil Dead, I think, should be...
That was Starz.
Yeah, Starz.
Wouldn't that be interesting if Starz took it over and gave it that vibe as opposed to the Vampire Diaries?
I'll tell you who I like network-wise at the moment, and they're all cable networks. I like Starz. I like I do like the CW most of the time. Starz, Sci-Fi, and Freeform.
Yeah, I would love it. I would love it on Sci-Fi.
Freeform are really impressing me at the moment with what they're willing to do and how they work with it. So that's
I mean, it's fine. They're just canceling Shadowhunters, but you know, whatever.
Is that them? I'm sorry. I had no idea who Shadowhunters are even on, which is probably part of the problem. What did I see was getting released on Freeform recently?
There's a mermaid show, I think.
No, the mermaid show is amazing, Mitch. It is unbelievably good, which Siren? It shouldn't be. Siren, yeah, I covered them at Comic-Con. I mean, I like genre television, Brittany. Like, I love genre television, and yeah, I was impressed. Yeah, but
I think the thing is, I do like Siren, and Shadowhunters is better, which is annoying.
Yeah, I haven't seen Shadowhunters.
Harry Shum Jr. is still in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was impressed by Siren's success and originality as a brand new property with new... None of the leads have starred in anything before. The showrunner is a brand new showrunner.
I was
really impressed that, like, it had no... And it was a totally original concept. It's not a reboot or a book adaptation or anything. Not that that's always a problem. But it is brand new in every way, and it has become like quite popular despite that, and that's kind of, for me, it was like spoke to the power of the material, and it was also like very grounded in reality. Like, it's like not really a monster like magic show, it's like a very urban fantasy, like very real world, and we've discovered like that this other species of humanoid lives on Earth, which is this sea species. I really liked it, but it just interested me. Like, yeah, the Freeform and sci-fi and Stars and all of those sort of cable networks are basically producing, I don't know, better, especially genre television, like better genre television. So, but I'm sure that Buffy would be popular enough to go to a commercial network.
Mm-hmm. I think it has to land on one of the basic cable channels because that's where it started. I don't see it going past that. My dream is probably Stars or even Freeform, but Freeform is the most unrealistic because that's Disney, and I don't see this faring well under Disney's hand, and I don't see it merchandising well.
I think it could move. It was under WGN at the end. That was like, I mean. I think it,
which is such a mess. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it could go to sci-fi. It's going to be, I think it could easily go to a sci-fi or something like that. It's so far away right now.
It'd just be a matter of, I think, like what they want, where they want their money to come from, basically, because 100% the branding, a major commercial network could bid for it easily and would be like, oh, my God, that's going to be like a big brand name thing that everyone is going to want to check out. And it's a matter of whether the studio is like, yeah, we want to play ball with that, or like, no, we want to do it another way. Like if they want to sort of buy into the traditional, the traditional funding methods and the traditional, way the broadcast television worked, or whether they will go to cable or even to streaming. So I don't know. It could be. Yeah.
I hope it's not streaming. I think this has life for cable. And while I'm not exactly on the bandwagon that we need to stay on cable, I still think there's something to be said about like AMC, for instance, like having this giant renaissance. That was so big. And that, I mean, as my final speculation, I would even say the AMC has to be looking to replace The Walking Dead with another genre show.
No way will Buffy be a AMC. The AMC stuff's too R-rated. It has to be teen girl accessible for sure.
Yeah. So CW. I'm going to fall back to CW.
CW is a good bet, but I'd say something like Freeform or Sci-Fi is also very possible.
Sci-Fi makes me so nervous. Like, That's a lot, yeah.
Yeah. That was my gripe, is making just people jumping all over something and ripping it apart before it even exists in its even statement-worthy form. But that is the nature of the internet. Even though I love it, it sometimes annoys me.
Yeah.
I didn't even touch it. When it was happening, I just looked at it and I was like, oh. And then I looked the other way. I don't know what that says about Buffy or my relationship toward it, but that's just how it happened.
Yeah, like I've just seen a headline on Junkie, which is an Australian like pop culture news site that's like, we have some info on the Buffy reboot and it's not as bad as you think. Like that's the headline.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like that's the kind of headline that you don't want to be existing if you are the studio. So I've got to assume that the announcement was somewhat out of their control because that's just stupid. Like that's just ridiculous.
I guess I should be excited. And now that we have more information, who knows? We'll see. I'm sure we'll have to talk about it when it comes about somewhere in some capacities. So that'll be exciting.
Yeah. A 20 years later sequel. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of like canon stuff like that could be used or that they could choose to keep or disregard from how the show ended and in the comics. And speaking of canon continuity, can't wait to get to your hype, Brittany, because I have some questions.
Oh, I have a lot of answers.
Okay.
Are we good? Yeah, go ahead.
We're going to go to Grabs now, but we'll get there because I'm like, I have the canon of another universe.
I have so many questions as well about my hype, but wow. It's going to be great.
No, cool. All right. Mitch, do you want to go next?
Yes, my gripe, I think I'm so flustered from it that I'm going to read it as I put it, because I didn't intentionally write it this poorly, but it's just how it came out. Money paying in it not being good.
Wow.
because I was just, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, I was just at the Taylor Swift concert, and there you don't really eat food, you kind of just go crazy and don't drink water, you just exist as a human somehow. Day after, I'm sitting in my hotel room. I go on Grubhub. I'm like, Grubhub is the best service to use because even at the podunk town I'm staying in, anybody will use it because it's just common. I'm not going to use Uber Eats even, just like the original, the standard. I order the food. I'm starved. It's 11. I wait until 1:30 to call the restaurant.
In the morning.
PM. So I ordered at 11. This is like lunchtime.
Okay, yes. I was like, okay.
The first meal of the day, right? Because you're just waking up and you're like hungover from the concert. I don't drink, but I was hungover from the concert. Like you just you get concert hungover.
Yeah.
Oh, everything hungover. It was just so hot outside. So it just burns so many more calories in the water. So you're in the headspace with me here where you're like, oh my God, where's my food? It's 2.5 hours later. I'm so polite that I'm not going to call the people. I'm like, don't want to bother them. But I call finally and I'm like, about to, you know, call and talk to them. And it rings 5 times and then it says, I'm sorry, we're on vacation from the 26th to the 29th. Please try us again.
What? So they took the order was placed through the site and they didn't. Oh my God.
And I'm starved and I can't even handle it. And I don't even know where I am to go get food in the first place. So it was really just the first place I tried. I was like, oh, okay, great ratings. I'm going to try this on Grubhub. This is not a Grubhub gripe. This is a paying for things and not getting the service, but also having them take your money thing. Because they should have done something about their whatever, their Grubhub.
Like their restaurant should have been like not available right now.
Yeah, and they still charged for it. And then they said, how was your order on Grubhub? And I was like, what's happening? How is this going through? I know. So I called the Grubhub people. They were wonderful. Props to their customer service team. They made it flawless to get them a refund back. But that's not the only thing that's happened to me in the past day. Because in the same day, I also ordered on Amazon, of all places, right? Amazon seems to like really have its shit on lock with its sellers and whatnot. I ordered a 2DS that I was getting with my birthday money. Woo, we still get birthday money from like gift cards, Amazon, whatever.
Is this a game?
It's just the console, the Nintendo 2DS.
Okay.
So very exciting. It was just cute and white and orange. And I was like, it's my present for myself for my Amazon gift cards. I love this. I found a good priced one that was used. I was like, I'll go with that. I don't get any updates on tracking for like.
So this is like a person to person reseller. Is that?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. So it's not exactly like Amazon stock issue. It's kind of just people. These are like specific small town people things that seem to affect the larger world. It was it wasn't updated for 5 days in shipping. And then eventually I just looked today and it didn't even like send an email or anything. I don't know. Didn't really check it. I was like, where is this thing? I need it by now. And it just said, sorry, you've been refunded. They ran out of stock. I was like, that's a thing. Like, and then what's even more annoying is the fact that I purposefully spent the gift card on my shared Amazon account because I didn't want to have the gift card money left over for someone else to spend by accident. Now it's back on there and I have to spend it so that no one else does. I'm just stuck. I'm stuck from these people doing these things that they don't know are really that's upsetting to others. But it's a really simple point of if you have a business and you have something listed online, especially in our very online driven culture, you can't just not give that person the thing and still pretend like it's there and wait so long to tell them that they couldn't get it. Especially with food. That's the bigger one here, honestly, still. Like, game console aside, I can survive without that. But the food, I was really just, that was a tough moment, honestly. It was really bad, but world problem-ish, I guess.
I did see a tweet the other day, though, that was hilarious. And, I mean, Nat, you ship stuff within the United States, too. But Mitch will actually probably relate to more. But it was like ordering something via USPS, which is the United States Postal Service, and it said, day one, cannot find your item. Your item has arrived.
Same.
It's like the tracking just doesn't work. It's like, we can't find that item when you're looking for it, but oh, it's at your doorstep now.
I had a similar kind of like internet issue when I was in Italy in May. More than once, and I'd never experienced this before, and maybe it's a small town thing, or maybe like one of the girls we sort of met up with in Italy was like, oh yeah, like that's really normal for Italy. And I was just like, oh my God, how do you exist? I can't handle this. Was that like you'd Google map something, like a restaurant, for example. Like I'm very big, like, oh, I'm not just going to see the first place. I'm going to like check the Yelp ratings. And I'm like, if I'm eating like a pizza in this tiny Italian town, I want to eat like the best one so I don't have like FOMO. And I would like Google map the thing. And pick, say, the one with the best rating. It's like, we could have gone right here, but no, we're going to walk, like, you know, another 15 minutes, like, around a corner and whatever. And then, like, the place would not be there. Like one of them was, like, we've gone away for the entire summer, but it didn't say, like, and one of them was, like, in another town was, and this wasn't a small town either. This was, like, a suburb of Rome. One of them was like, yeah, we are. I Google mapped it and I got to a corner and it was like a renovation site. Like the whole thing was like, but on the site, it like had said like open now, like on the Google map, like it had the, they didn't change their listing. And then my friend's friend, this girl that we met up with was like, oh yeah, like the Google Map listings in this country haven't been updated since the time of Caesar. And I was like, God. Oh, great. A Roman resident. And it was just, I'd never experienced that before. And I was like, why is this happening? And it did happen on the first day of my trip here to Comic-Con as well, to the States. I was meeting a friend from the airport. Like we flew in and she was flying out 3 hours later. So she was leaving California and we were literally crossing over. We're like, okay, let's go to like a diner near the airport and hang out for like 3 hours before you fly. And so I found like the best rated like breakfast diner. People like, you know, you would not believe the breakfast burritos here and stuff like that. And we met up there and it had a sign being like, oh, we're closed like today and tomorrow. But that must have been like an emergency situation because it was like not, you know, it was not exactly the, like it wasn't a long-term closure, but we did find somewhere else right nearby that was not, you know, not as highly rated on Yelp and Google, but that's fine. But the long-term closure of these restaurants in Italy or, like, these places that I was Google mapping and they weren't there and I was just, like, not handling it at all. I was just like – and it made me kind of reflect what you said, Mitch, about, like, oh, you know, in this culture of, like, internet-driven instant access, I'm like, maybe I need to like adjust like what I depend on and stuff, but it pissed me off a lot. So
I just remember like a kind of a funny anecdote when I grew up on talking about really very much about small town again and businesses. I think it seems we're seeing a trend here, huh? It was that my cousins, their family lived in Iowa and they were visiting there for the summer. And they sent me a picture when they were over there visiting that was a storefront, not sure what kind it's called, like an antique shop or something. And it seemed like it was kind of written in a rush, much like my statement, money paying and it not being good. And it's in their statement, handwritten, was, "We sorry, we've a baby." And that's just kind of what happens. Because I know that was just kind of, we always grew up saying, "We sorry, we've a baby," whenever there's been this kind of scenario. So let's just, I'm going to assume we've a baby for all of these guest scenarios, if anything, because I don't know why else you want to miss out on Taylor Swift weekend, especially. Like, you should have left a little bit in advance before your vacation was booked, huh? It's a lot of good business.
Really strange. I don't know. It's, yeah. Yeah, very, the purchase and then the thing not being open is, like, purchasing online and then being like, "Hey, actually, we don't have that anymore," does suck, though, especially with the food. Mm. Like, we have, like, Menulog and Eat Now, which are, like, Grubhub, and they say, like, you know, this restaurant's closed. Like, it only shows you the ones that are currently open. Like,
right.
And, you know, like, it doesn't – that's very odd.
That's – so Grubhub is, like, Australianized there with different apps. Why can't they – just have one, like, thing, so, for the world. That's so weird.
Yeah, we have we have a few, but yeah, it's not the same service worldwide. It's like, we have Uber Eats now, but that's a bit different because that's like, Uber Eats is like, Uber Eats is a service where they hire people to pick up food from restaurants, whereas Eat Now or Menulog here are ones where it is restaurants with their own delivery people listing their delivery options. Wow. So which one is Grubhub? Is it like
– Grubhub is shoot.
Grubhub is closer to like Uber Eats. Uber it's Eats? Like a hybrid because some sites will send their own people, but if like you don't have – it's like – okay, so there's Grubhub and Seamless – and like Seamless will have people go and get it. Like, so like if you want Chipotle, like someone has to go and get it and bring it to you. Sort of like an Uber Eats situation.
Yeah.
Because Chipotle doesn't have their own drivers. But like Grubhub will probably use places, like if they have a driver, they'll use their drivers.
Because I think the order goes to in restaurant as opposed to, like, it doesn't get bounced through anywhere else. Like, they receive Grubhubs because, like, when I've called restaurants, they're like, "Oh, you're the Grubhub that just came in. Mm-hmm. Sure, we can edit that order." So they get the ticket for it right there.
So
they have, like, it's set up.
Yeah, I think ours is a bit – like, there are definitely ones here that the main thing is just a central service for them to list where they're willing to deliver. So they get the order and then they send their delivery person rather than you going to their individual website or whatever. Then there's like, Uber Eats and Deliveroo, where I assume they are both synced. It's like the store gets the order and the delivery people get the order and the delivery person picks it up. It is not the store's delivery person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, it's definitely not a central, worldwide central service like Uber or something like that.
What's funny is that like when I was living in Seattle, I found it very odd that no one called restaurants to go get the food, that they exclusively used Yelp Eat or whatever Yelp does for all of this too. That seemed to just be the app, like amongst anyone I talked to. Very strange to me. So I kind of got into the habit because I was like, I guess my old age ways of calling restaurants is done. But now I feel like I need to go back to it for the fact that I have only ever had successful restaurant endeavors when I've called. But whenever I do it online, you don't have that connection. You don't have that person telling you, "Yes, we're open. Sure, your order will be in."
No, we're out of the fish special or whatever.
Right. Because you can't, I don't know. It's hard to keep up with all that. I get it. And also it's just to the point of, you know, when your order is coming more exclusively, because I've had orders come really close to my house in Denver, like within 10 minutes, as opposed to like when I ordered them at great restaurants around me. I love my area, but the Uber or whatever Uber Eats or however else I would be ordering it might say like hour and a half. So like that's another part of it that I think is kind of just missed in the digital age, and it can't really be replaced with a live person. That's just going to always kind of, I think it's going to have to be my go-to now, especially when I'm desperate like I was.
So when you have a small, when you, with the small town you're staying in, is that like Taylor Swift was like playing at a stadium in a small, like not in the main city, like in the city?
Yes. No, she was the town where you're from. Where the Patriots play.
Like so where, she was playing in Foxborough, Massachusetts, which I don't know, Britt, is that like 45 minutes away from Boston?
Yeah, it's like 45 minutes away from Boston, but it's where my favorite football team plays.
Right, like and a lot of people wearing Patriots jerseys there too. Yeah. I was thinking of you actually.
Yeah, it's in a huge stadium, like a O2 or Wembley type situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 60,000 people, and I think the largest stadium of, at least the American Tour, I don't know, it was a lot. So definitely, like, once again, you wouldn't think you would want to miss out on that business, but that's besides the point. We sorry, we have a baby.
Yeah. Okay. Very strange. All right. So that happened to you. And did you go to that show because it was the one near your hometown, or why that?
I could do New York City. It actually ends up being longer because of all the traffic. It takes probably about 3 hours from Albany to New York City to go to anything going on down there. I could do New Jersey. I feel more comfortable at Gillette for Foxborough, Massachusetts, as I do for MetLife for New Jersey. Sorry, Brett. I don't know. It's just something about Massachusetts. So
I
felt like
all my place to go. Stadiums. So
yeah,
that's fine.
It just was the choice.
The worst place in the world.
It was the choice between Madison Square Garden and this always for me.
Ooh, and because, Madison is like more like hype, like more like a.
Yeah. I went to Staples Center before. It probably would be somewhat comparable, but larger, of course. So
Staples in LA.
In Los Angeles. Yeah, I saw her there for Red. But I mean, she's getting too large. I don't know. It feels like it's growing. So I going to what was a very large stadium was so overwhelming. It really was. I mean, that's kind of besides the point of all of this, but it's just, it's the roads and the infrastructure and the businesses are not built for this big of an event, let alone Patriots games, I'm sure, because when you're leaving the stadium, you don't leave the stadium. You wait for an hour and a half until anything clears out.
Too, though. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm sure. And then when you get on the road, people start using the shoulder as the third lane. I guess it's kind of sort of allowed, but then it just kind of ends at one point and everyone's trying to merge again. You don't really move. That's the thing. It's such a strange experience to fill a small town like that. I've heard it kind of feels like this for an ATX festival that the town doesn't really hold that many people, but they still like shove them all in somehow. I'm sure this is a more extreme example though, for the fact that Foxborough, Massachusetts isn't known. Austin is. I think that just speaks for itself.
Yeah, and like you'd think they'd have it figured out with the Patriots playing there like 9 times
a
year.
No, they don't.
They don't.
They don't. It's horrible. It's always bad from no matter what event you're seeing, no matter how full the stadium is. It's such a mess, Natalie. Don't go there. Please.
I mean, I went to an arena show for Harry on my trip, which he played two nights at an 18,000 person. So he had like 40,000 people in over two nights instead of like 60,000 on one night or whatever in a big stadium. But which is a different story. But Brittany, do you go to this stadium for home games or?
No, so I have never been to Foxborough to see my Patriots play. It's on my bucket list and I got to go soon because I think Tom Brady's going to retire in the next 2 years. So but it's exactly what Mitch is saying. It's like a dreaded trip. Like I've seen Tom Brady play here against the New York Jets at MetLife Stadium a few times. Like I've seen him probably four or five times here, but you know, it's not the same when, I mean, actually there's probably more Patriots fans at a Jets Patriots game than there are Jets fans, but it's just, it's not the same. Like you're not in that home environment. So it's like, it's on a bucket list. We'll see if it happens this fall. I'm kind of hoping I go this fall, just make the trip and do it because you know, you never know with football or anything if someone's like, you know what, I'm done. So it's a priority. I will have my own Foxborough tale someday, but yeah, I got to get up there. It's just, it's such a pain because like Mitch was saying, it's 45 minutes outside of Boston. It's not close to anything. There's nowhere to stay yeah. out there. So regardless, when you leave, you have to drive, which is
yeah.
another hiccup. So I got to find like an afternoon game so that, you know.
I've definitely had that kind of issue in a few places, like traveling, especially in the States, like sometimes I've been like seeing a band and like the date of the show that's like when I'm in the States is like in a town that's like it's easy to get to, I guess, like on like a Greyhound like coach or something or a train, but they're like not the main towns. They're like mm-hmm. random, like, yeah, like in, yeah, just really random places that are like, I guess it's maybe like college town or like something like really strange, like even Mitch, like I haven't been to Albany. I've been to like some tiny town near Albany because.
Have you?
Because of a concert that was like in a small.
Troy?
No, it's just wow. really strange.
It must be and smaller then, than that. That's incredible. There's not much smaller around here. You would know they would have to go to. Yeah, I feel that.
And then with Taylor, I saw her once at the ANZ Stadium in Sydney, which is basically the big stadium that's part of our old like Olympic showgrounds. So like when we had the Olympics – like the Olympic Village that was built. And so we have a couple of stadiums still out there and they're kind of like out of the way as well. And that getting out of Taylor, like trying to get an Uber, we had to get a, like an Uber pickup out of there. And that took like three hours or something. Yeah.
Easily. That was probably quick. Honestly.
Greatest experience. And my friend that I was with had a broken leg. So that was not the greatest experience of my life, but
it doesn't have to be that way because like when I saw her in Staples Center, the city's built to have that many people doing all of these things. And I was just out. Me and Brittany were just shocked. I'll be talking about Brittany. There's high school friend Brittany and then there's podcast Brittany that we're on the
so this is talking high school friend about Brittany is not talking about me.
Because yeah. it'd be weird to talk about someone in that perspective when she's right here. But no, it's so easy to leave Staples Center. I had no line, nothing, not even leaving the parking garage. It's just you have to build a city around this, knowing that you're going to be doing events like this. Or else if you don't, it's going to be, I mean, even like San Diego probably is a good comparison for Comic-Con, I'm sure.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Like, you don't have anywhere to stay. There's not enough restaurant. There's just not enough resource for the area to really hold you down.
Yeah, the San Diego is a whole nother story. But anyway, definitely had issues with food in small towns. Definitely had an issue with, like, the Greyhound bus, like, not picking you up. Like, it's – you book a ticket, but they're like, oh, no, we actually filled up at the last stop, so you've got to wait for the next one. And it's like, but I can't wait for the next one. So one time I had to get, like, a cab from, like, some small town in New Hampshire, I think, into Boston because, like, that's the thing. It was, like, an hour's drive outside of Boston or something, and it was really – I don't know where it was. I don't even know where it was at this point. But, yeah, small town America is not the greatest experience of my life, but they possibly should have been prepared for the Taylor Swift concert indeed.
That specific sub-restaurant, yes.
Yeah. yeah. So weird. Anyway. Okay, so moving on, I suppose, my gripe is also about, well, leading on from what I mentioned about recently traveling to Comic-Con and to my friend, meeting my friend that morning for breakfast when it was closed. That was all fine. That was all like small potatoes compared with what was to come. because I traveled into the USA on Friday the 13th. And yeah, so we're staying with these people, great friends of mine who I've stayed with before and who I always see when I'm in LA. And we arrived there on the Friday night after a great day out with Ariana at her work. We got to see her show taping, and we saw my friend's house in Culver City and had a shower there and played with their dogs, and it was all great. Got back at like 11 o'clock at night to my friend's place on the other side of Los Angeles, and there was like a bad smell on the stairs, and she'd been kind of warning me. She was like, yeah, we think something died, like a rat or something, and the neighbors are really crazy, and we've tried to contact the landlord to get them to clean it up. Like the neighbor's landlord, but the guy who lives there is like crazy, and I don't know, like, and so this was sort of going on, and we'd been like talking about it, and it wasn't that bad. Like, we've had a dead rat smell down the side of my house once, where I used to live in like an area with some bushland, and it wasn't great, but like, you know, there was a bit of a smell, and they were kind of making jokes about like this guy who lived there was really erratic, and that, you know, maybe it was like a body that he'd like hidden under the stairs.
No.
And then the next day was fine. We went out in the morning and we had lunch, and then we were walking around the park with Karen and Terrence, who's Karen's friend. And then I got a text from my friend who I was staying with to say like, good news, the smell will be gone soon. Bad news, after the coroner comes and removes the body. Like, that was the way that she phrased it. She was like, good news, we found out about the smell and it'll be gone soon. Bad news, it won't happen till the coroner comes and removes the body. And we were just like, what has happened? Because at lunch, one of the other neighbors had texted my friend and said like, oh, you know, have you heard from this guy, like Tim, the crazy erratic guy that they were joking might have hidden a body. You know, his mail hasn't been picked up and stuff. They ended up going into the house next door. And my friend, I was staying with a couple, and the husband or the partner found the neighbor's dead body. So the guy had died at some point in the last few days. Like, there was a big heat wave in LA, and I didn't really know like what happened, like what killed him or whatever, but don't think it was like suspicious. It wasn't because they didn't get like wrapped up in a murder trial. So basically this thing that we'd been like making jokes about, like, oh, like maybe this crazy man has hidden a body. It actually was his body that had been creating the problems. And so that was kind of like a weird thing that happened right when we arrived in Los Angeles. And it was not, I was like, is this like a normal thing? Like, does this happen a lot? And they were like, no, like this has certainly never happened anywhere near me before. And they, basically had to deal with that. And they just kept being weird updates. Like, the guy had a dog, and so someone had to like go and get the dog and make sure the dog was being looked after. And then there was all this strange things that happened around that, because this guy was apparently like really erratic and violent and like rude and racist. And like one time these people were like doing the roofing on that property, and he was like throwing things at them and telling them to turn down the music and cut the power cables to their tools and stuff like that. Like, apparently he was real weird. And then they heard from this woman who was like in a dog walking group, or like from a dog park that they didn't even know he went to, because it was like on the other side of the city, that she'd kind of been got a letter from him saying that, you know, we will look up, you know, can you please look after the dog if anything happens to me? Like, I don't think I'm gonna survive this. And that was talking about the roofers playing their music and the one-sided feud he'd invented with them, you know, months ago or years ago. So she was like, should I still take the dog? And they were like, I guess, like, my friends do animal rescue, and there was another neighbor who was willing to take the dog, but this woman had a dog that the dead guy's dog had known like their whole lives, like it was a dog friend or whatever. So she took the dog. But from meeting her, all these stories came out about like, oh, like he was a great guy, and like these, you know, like videos of him like singing happy birthday at the dog park and all of this stuff. And they're like, oh my God, like this guy had like a total like split personality, because we never saw him being like nice or kind or having any friends. And apparently he had this like whole dog walking social life, including another guy that my friends knew and who didn't know, like they knew them, like didn't know that he was involved in this at all. And so there was like this strange, like missed connection of like someone that like a mutual person involved in all of this that everyone knew, but that no one knew the other side knew. And it was all very strange. And the guy's family had to be contacted, and they hadn't heard from him in like 10 years. He'd like totally disappeared off the grid. So it was a very strange week, just getting all of these updates about like what was going on in the place where we were staying with this discovery of this dead body next door. And it was just like a weird, mild hysteria the whole week because of this, like even when other stuff was fine. So it was really very odd. So that's my gripe. Damn. Is that my holiday, well, sort of working holiday for Comic Con, was like had this like extra layer of anxiety because of the dead body.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So everyone's like, oh.
It's like, yeah. I want to ask some follow-up questions, but they're I don't have them.
It's an interesting situation.
How did his
very strange.
Did I miss a detail of where his body ended up and how it ended up there, like hidden? Was it just in the house that no one was
in
able
his
to?
House.
Okay.
So it wasn't inside, hidden, it was just inside
his it
house.
Wasn't hidden under the stairs. That was just a joke
was,
they'd made.
Yes, I was picturing him walking under the stairs and deciding to die of heat stroke there.
No, before they actually knew that someone had really died, there were lots of jokes being made about like this crazy man hiding a body under the stairs. Wow. But
I
no,
just,
I guess
there's so much there.
It was in his house, I guess. And yeah, I don't know how long that had been, but a couple of days at least. I don't know much about how long a body starts to make a rotting smell.
Well, I guess we just all need to read A Rose for Emily now and feel content.
What?
That's a story about. Short story about old woman who was never with a man, and she tried dating but she never could, and she became very upset at that. I'm very much paraphrasing from like elementary school or something. And she dies holding a rose, something of a lover, I'm not sure, dying rotting in her bed. She's found later from the smell that was part of it. Something about arsenic, maybe, I don't know. Just A Rose for Emily is something about her love and the fact that she was rotting and dying while holding, I think, the roses in her bed. So she was smelt and found, much like your host's neighbor.
Awesome. So that's my gripe. Bit of a mood killer. Sorry. But yeah, it was very weird. And it was like, these people were the same people that helped me when I had to like leave Comic Con a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I had to leave early because my aunt died while I was at Comic Con. And so it's like every time I'm in that house, there's like a lot of weird emergency death situations. And so it's like a very strange thing. I don't know.
Well, let's not have any more of that. I mean, please stay with them, but just get out the bad juju somehow.
So weird. They have a lot of really good cats, though, Mitch. You'd like all of their cats. They have a lot of cats.
That makes it worth staying anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry that you keep having traumatic Comic-Con experiences involving death.
It was just so weird. It was just so weird, and it was, like, very, I don't know, it's very strange. And so the actual gripe is, like, having to take a vacation from a vacation. Because when I got home, I was like, okay, like, so I'm going to, like, all the things I was, like, meaning to do. Like, I, like, went to my local mall and I had, like, a massage and I got my eyebrows and eyelashes done and I got a pedicure, like, one after the other, like, hours of appointments. Like, all of these kind of like, little things I was planning to, like, do on the holiday because obviously I was going from LA to Comic-Con and working Comic-Con is really hard. And so, like, yeah, but the time in LA was really strange because of the dead guys. So I don't know. It was just a weird vibe and it happened. But I did a lot of other nice things in Los Angeles. It's just always going to be the dead guy vacation now. Like, that's it. That's what the memory is going to be. So I don't recommend it.
Out of all the things that happened, yes, I understand. I would still...
I saw Harry Styles' last concert of his tour, and that was beautiful. He cried. I cried. Everyone cried. He was so good. And I, you know, I went to, you know, I did a lot of things. I went to Ariana's work at Sony, and I went to WB and saw, like, some people I know from Supernatural and to pick up some stuff from Comic-Con. So I was just, like, wandering around the WB lot on my own being like, yep, I'm fine. Because I've never done the studio tour there or anything like that.
Oh,
like,
no.
I don't know anything about that. But
I was going to ask you if you saw Stars Hollow.
I don't know. It was on the map that they gave me, but I don't think that I saw, like, what – I don't know if that's still there, like, because
– Oh, yeah. They still have the gazebo and then the town square.
I don't think I saw the gazebo. I'm sorry, both of you.
No, that's okay.
I should have.
If you'd known.
Like, I knew, no, I vaguely knew it was there, but I was not, like, really walking around, like, too much, like, in terms of, like, poking around. But I wasn't on the tour. Like, I was just there for a work, like, thing. And I had a visitor pass. And I'm just like, I'm just gonna look a little bit. But. Yeah, they had, like, merchandise and stuff for it. I don't know, like, how long – when will they take that down? Like, is that not
– Well, they use it for other shows. Pretty Little Liars, Brittany, help me out here. You're going to know better than me. There's a Will Smith movie. Like, it just gets reused for anything.
Yeah, Desperate Housewives is down there for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, scenes
Ghost Whisperer.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So they're going to repurpose the hell out of it. Like, they won't show the gazebo, probably.
I don't think I got to the part with the town square. No, I saw it on the map, but I was just, like, poking around, like, the New York Street. They were shooting something on one of the New York streets and, like, the Midwest Street.
That one meta episode of Supernatural.
Yeah, when they're in it, and this is where Gilmore Girls was filmed, and yeah, it's weird. That's how we all started talking about this song before. Yeah.
I didn't know that was filmed on there. I mean, they mentioned Stars Hollow on it for sure. I don't know how, because they never filmed Supernatural in LA. Like, they've always filmed in Vancouver. But
oh yeah, that was the backlot. You could tell, just kind of like even
it
from
was
that
a backlot,
wasn't it?
It was a backlot.
Okay. So you don't think it was actual WB a backlot?
I'll look it up. But anyway, not important.
Yeah,
dead guy vacation. And then I just kept telling people about it because I didn't know what to say. Like, I kept being like, did I tell you we found a dead guy? And then, like I saw Neil, like, at Comic-Con. I was like, I didn't even tell you about the dead guy yet. And everyone just kept being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, I don't know. It's just weird. I don't do well with death, so this was, like, very strange. And obviously I didn't have to handle it hands-on or anything, but it was just the talking point that, you know, like, so update on the Tim situation, like, every day. So it was, like, very strange.
Dang. Anyway. I mean, I think last year seemed fine, right? You didn't have anything major because that was 2 years
last
ago.
Year
that-
at Comic-Con?
2 years you had to fly. 2 years ago is when you had to fly back to Australia.
No,
right?
That was 3 years ago, 2015, when I was traveling from New York to Comic Con. My dog died, and then when I got there, my aunt died, and so I had to fly back to Australia for the funeral. That was 15. Yeah. 16 was mostly fine. 16, I got really sunburned. And it was mostly fine. 16 was the year that I ate the gummy worms, Brittany. So that was cute. That was mostly fine. The worst thing that happened to me there was that I got badly sunburned and they cancelled Teen Wolf. Like, almost, like they announced in the panel that Teen Wolf was ending. 17, which was last year, was fine until Leo got really bad food poisoning and was like throwing up the whole of Sunday. Right. And we were looking for like an emergency room, didn't know if she was going to be able to get on the plane and anything like that. And like had to find
that's
like
so scary.
This stuff like Pedialyte, which I'd never even heard of. And like, and
oh, really?
Yeah.
That's like children's, like that's a toddlerish kind of nutritional drink thing, right?
Yeah, it's like electrolyte replacement. Yeah, it basically had to like, yeah, she was very scarily sick on the last day, and we didn't know whether we were going to be able to fly, like, or if she had to go to the hospital or anything. This year, the Comic-Con was fine, mostly fine. No real incidences except that the dead guy and then Karen fainted as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, I saw her tweet that and she was basically don't at me about it. So
yeah, I mean, that it happened. Oh. I still don't know why, but yeah, so it was a weird time. So I'd say like this is like the second least problematic. Like probably the least problematic was with the time when I got sunburned and Teen Wolf got cancelled. That one was like the least stressful.
Like sun poisoning. Like blisters?
It was severe sunburn. It was like I had to get in like baths with medicated stuff in it. And like, you know, like really? It was very bad sunburn.
Oh, but Natalie, that's horrible.
It was sort of my fault, but yeah.
It never feels like it's fully your fault. I know.
I also saw Chris Pine in sweatpants and a beard. And I was like one of the last people like for a few moments before he like went upstairs and like shaved and changed for the Star Trek premiere. So
you saw the beard before it went.
That like made up for the sunburn kind of.
Okay.
But so this year was like fine aside from the dead guy and Karen fainting was a bit weird, but yeah, we, I don't
weird,
know.
Weird. How just, sad. Poor Karen. I love Karen.
She's fine. It was really shocking.
It's so hot there. Yeah.
It wasn't so heat. It wasn't heat. I don't know. She should probably talk about it, but there was nothing. She wasn't compressed by heat. She said she started feeling really hot, but it was in Hall H, so it was cool. She wasn't sitting in a chair. She hadn't been standing in a line. She was standing in the press pit, which is by the side of the stage, totally open. She was leaning on a fence and the lights went down and the trailer came up for Venom. It was during Sony Venom, Tom Hardy, and she just fainted. And I don't know why.
I mean, that's my natural reaction to Tom Hardy too.
I mean, yeah, we did miss all of Tom Hardy being very cute. Because he was very overwhelmed. He's like a very low-key guy and like this is a very big budget thing and he'd never come to Hall H, I don't think. And he was really sweet, but I only heard like 5 minutes of him in the background. And Riz Ahmed was on the same panel, but they didn't come to save Karen. So, you know. One of the paramedics said it might have been because she like was possibly like standing straight like with her legs locked, apparently it can like cut off like circulation. Like,
yes.
Like, if you're in the military and you have to stand on parade, you have to do it with like a slight bent knee or something. But we hadn't even been standing that long. Like, it was just crazy. Anyway, so that was weird. And the dead guy, apparently they hadn't come in. Like, they didn't file a coroner's report until like after the weekend, and they don't know when the people are going to come in and clean it. It's all very strange.
That smell just gets worse as it goes on. So I'm sure
the body was removed. It's more the body was removed. It's just that they didn't do the like afterward cleanup. I don't know. It's so bizarre. Oh, I feel like this is too much dead guy, but it was just very strange. And my friends were very funny about it because they're not like really highly strung people who are like, oh my God, breakdown. But like, they're like very sardonic and funny about it. But I still feel like it was pretty bad for them as well. Like, it was pretty shocking and disturbing kind of situation for them as well. They're just not the kind of people to have like a crying breakdown over it at your feet. But very strange. Very weird.
I'm happy you made outside of the dead guy without having to witness the dead guy. Or deal with the dead guy.
Yeah, it's. I just had to be like dead guy adjacent, which is fine, but very strange. And I'd rather not be dead guy adjacent. So
yes,
yeah, weird, weird weekend. Yeah, weird week. Anyway, let's move on. So that's my gripe. All of that, the existence of the dead guy and the need to recover from the vacation because of the dead guy and stuff. So yeah. Anyway, we've got plenty of things to hype about as well. Interestingly, two of my own hype and Brittany's hype have both been big parts of my dead guy recovery. So, Brittany, do you want to start, or how do we want to do this?
So while Natalie was dealing with a dead body across the country, I was here in the East Coast of the country, going to enjoy the American pastime of watching older actors get paid a lot of money to dance around to ABBA songs for apparently the second time in their careers. So I went to go see Mamma Mia 2 last weekend on opening weekend, and I decided this kind of last minute on Saturday. It was like 4 p.m. and there was a 7:45 showing, and I was like, okay, perfect. I will rewatch Mamma Mia 1 because I don't really remember it. And I definitely blocked it out for a reason. And then I got to the theater to see a jam-packed viewing of Mamma Mia 2. And I have to say, God bless Colin Firth for just showing up on that set and giving it his all. That man was swinging from lines on boats and dancing and floating in the water. And he was having the time of his life. Christine Baranski is the greatest woman to ever grace the screen.
Brittany, did I tell you we saw her in Rome?
In Rome?
Yes.
That's very Christine Baranski. She would be there. Did she have a hat?
She had a shiny coat at 11 p.m. at night at the Trevi Fountain. We were like touristing around looking at the stuff by night, and Christine Baranski like got out of a car, and I guess she was like, here's the Trevi Fountain. Now I'm going to a restaurant. And this like older lady was like, aren't you that woman from that thing? And she was like, oh, I don't know. But we did not approach Christine Baranski. But that happened in May. But I'm now kind of like, yeah, I have a lot of questions about why she popped up at the Trevi Fountain at 11 p.m. at night. And this movie has awakened all of those questions. So
she's a godsend. The only thing I have to say about Mamma Mia 2, well, first of all, is I'm kind of in like a weird History Boys renaissance year of my life. Like, I've been seeing new works from all of them, and this cannot be the new work I see from Dominic Cooper. So I gotta see something else from him this year, because I just can't. This can't be it. I'm not checking my Dom box yet, because I can't. This is not qualify.
I don't even know why he was cast in the first one. He can't sing. I don't know
why. Yeah, you should have seen him try to sing in this one. It was great.
I've seen it.
No, the second one?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, okay, good. Then we can definitely dive into this. So,
yeah, because that's why I say it was one of the other, it's one of the only moments of true happiness I've experienced since finding the dead guy.
Okay, great. Okay, yeah. So my biggest question, and I don't know if you noticed this, but it's something I paid great attention to. I want a copy of every single day of filming's call sheets. Because I guarantee that everyone was only on that set together for at most 2 days. Because the way that when Colin Firth and Skarsgård are coming in, I guarantee you that they were not on set the same day as Pierce Brosnan. And they must have like back filmed them being in a scene together, because they don't share a single shot in any of the large ensemble parts. Like,
yeah,
they're not together.
That's the big thing. Like, that they don't, everything was like so separated. There was like so much of it that I loved. But everything was like so staggered that, yeah, I guess like that party at the end, like,
and
I guess that's like the way that they got everyone to do it. They're like, don't worry, it won't be a big commitment. You only have to show up for like 4 hours, Meryl. Yeah. You know, like you only have to show up for, you know, a little while.
Yeah. And Julie
but they still
Walters,
managed to piece it together.
Yeah, it was great. And like the younger girls were so good.
Oh my God.
And the younger guys were phenomenal. Like
all of them were amazing. The flashback babies were all of them. Lily James is becoming one of my favorite humans because she's so full of life. She's like a bit like goofy. Like she's not like a girl that's like very she's not a very polished girl. She's very like goofy and willing to just kind of throw herself in and be like ridiculous. She's kind of like that in the Guernsey did you see the Guernsey literary movie? I don't even know if that came out in the US.
No, I only really know her from Baby Driver.
Oh, well, she's in Downton Abbey.
Oh, I didn't.
That's how I met her. She's in Downton Abbey. And she, obviously she was in Baby Driver. She was in the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, which is like a movie adaptation of a book about World War II.
I just haven't seen it.
And she's one of those girls that's a bit like Hayley Atwell in that they're like Willie or Billy Piper, that they're willing to kind of like be very goofy publicly or in their performances, that they're not like a very pristine, like beautiful and feminine and all of that, but they're still willing to be like ridiculous in the way that it's sort of charming that boys are ridiculous, but the girls don't usually get to be, if you know what I mean. Like the thing with her, like kind of, yeah, just how out there she was most of the time, like the little tiny bit where she's kind of like getting the oranges and like bouncing it off her elbow and the, you know, her, the fact that she's like, you know, into the dungarees and stuff. Like she kind of like made that role really come alive in this movie. And I just love her face and her enthusiasm and so many great one-liners in the writing. But, and then contrasting her to the young lady who was taking on the Herculean task of doing a young Christine Baranski, injecting good. That spirit. And she was unbelievable. And I looked her up and I was like, you need a freaking platform of your own. Cause she's like a Broadway actress. She hasn't done that much like on screen and she's just so good. And I don't know how they found her, but she was a miracle. I was just dying. All three of the young boys were really engaging. The young Colin Firth was very, very sweet and funny. Really didn't address the fact that that character is gay.
No, which
I was kind of like,
because
Colin, the whole thing is like the Donna, like Meryl was the one girl that he ever slept with. And after that, he discovered he was gay. And obviously that they kind of, you know, pursued the, you know, he was still pursuing her that summer. But they never even addressed the fact that, like, his adult self, I was just like, okay, really? But aside from that, they were great. And especially when you put them together, when you saw them next to each other, you were like, oh, yeah, that's really it was very well done.
Yeah, the credits song was, like, so good. Like, yeah. I would pay to go see just that again.
Yeah.
It was so good.
But yeah, they sort of trailed off with the characters of the youngins. Like they kind of like they just faded that storyline out and didn't come back to it.
Yeah, they were like, you know what? Actually, we have enough for a movie. We're just gonna stop here.
Yeah, like it was kind of like
if we can
got
get
to the
Sharon
point.
In here for 5 more minutes, we're gonna do it.
Yeah, and so it did get a bit ridiculous. I got really engaged with the flashback story. Like I was like, okay, I'd watch this as an entire movie, like without the others, you know, like being involved. But then they kind of trailed off from that. And there's just a lot of factors of this movie, like that could have been very strange, like Amanda and Dom playing, you know, this happily married couple now and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And apparently they were fine with it, but like, it was just so many factors that could have been so bizarre, but it still was just full of joy and it was great. So yeah, I am thrilled. But Colin, oh, and he still looks so good when he like the dock, like the ferry guard, like all of the gags, the ferry guard. And
age has
when
like been kind to you, sir.
Yeah, when Colin comes and he's got the sunglasses on and. Oh, it's
when he's honestly when they're coming into the harbor and he's dancing on the boat and he's like spinning himself around and he's holding Pete Skarsgård. I was dying. I was laughing so hard in that movie theater.
It's full of joy.
It is. It was just like, that's why it's my hype, because it was just, yes, it's stupid and like the promotional poster is so badly photoshopped with all of them being together, but it is just like, it was such a joyful 2 hours of my life, and I had such a good time. It was a great time.
Yeah, we saw it only a couple of days ago. Leo had a friend from school say, you know, here, and I had a bunch of cinema vouchers that were gonna expire, and I'd been planning to go and see it like by myself, and I was like, oh yeah, I was like, I've got these cinema vouchers, we could go like and go to a movie. And she was like, yeah, mate, I want to see Mamma Mia. And I was like, yeah, okay. yes, good. And so Leo was like this third wheel on our Mamma Mia experience. And she hasn't seen the first one. And like when the credits were, I think in the first song, like in the song at Oxford, I was like, okay. So here's like the entire premise of the first movie. And like I just told it to her because I saw the stage show. Like I saw the musical before the movie came out.
Yeah, I saw it on Broadway.
Yeah, I saw it in, I think, an Australian tour. But Australia, everyone loves ABBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Australia really fucking loves ABBA. Like, I mean,
I was
like,
just in Sweden where the ABBA Museum is. I was in Stockholm. And, like, the Mamma Mia promotion was non-existent in Sweden. Like,
yeah.
You wouldn't even know it was coming out. And I'm like, I can see an ABBA museum and there is zero Mamma Mia promotion here.
ABBA as a band, after they won Eurovision, Australia in the 70s was like one of, if not the main place that they took off. So they became, you know how like some bands like are in, say, in the USA and not that popular, but like in Japan, they have a weird cult following or something like that. ABBA got a cult Australian fan base before they became a worldwide hit. And I don't know why, except for that Australia just really likes disco. Like, we really like drag culture. We really like all of these different, like, glam things. Like, glam rock and disco does really well historically in Australia for some reason, probably because we're tacky. I don't know. Australia and ABBA is, like, a very special, weird relationship. And so I love ABBA. But Mamma Mia toured to Australia like very early, basically, like before it, you know, not before Broadway, but it might, I don't know, it might have been. But I saw Mamma Mia a long time ago and I really liked it. And the movie is very, I don't know, it's ridiculous and fun. But yeah, I don't know, Mamma Mia 2, I had some questions about like the continuity of the Mamma Mia universe canon that I need to like watch the two back to back
and I watched them back to back and I still have questions.
Yeah. So, but it was overwhelmingly fun and joyful. So yeah.
I still haven't seen this movie, and actually I'm planning on spending it as my 1 year anniversary in my current relationship to go see this movie.
Well, you should watch the first one on Netflix first.
Yes, I am planning that part actually too, because I thought that was so awesome that it was just added on. At least I just had seen it recently on there, and I was like, yes, yeah, it's going to be a whole experience. I'm going to ask you guys to spoil me on whether or not there's a young Cher. That's what I want to know.
No young Cher.
Okay, missed opportunity. Whatever, I'll take it.
Well, Cher is the grandmother.
Yeah,
right. So wouldn't she show up in the Oxford stuff?
No.
That's exactly the point of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I'm asking my question.
The point of her appearing at the end is exactly the point of what you just said. So that's an interesting thing. Yeah.
I like that. And I like Lily James. Lily James. I mean, how could it be?
Amazing.
Yeah.
And she's all freckly and she's so cute. Like it's such a beautiful role. Like it's kind of like almost like the way that like Donna, the character, is portrayed in the first movie by Meryl. It's kind of all like a bit like kitschy and like, oh, we were these crazy rebels. Lily really brings that character like to real life. Like it's like, okay, despite the fact that this is an ABBA musical, like I get that character, a very deeply or as deeply as is possible from Lily's performance, and it's really quite special.
Yeah, and I think I liked it more than the first one.
Yeah.
Wow.
I really liked all of the young
yeah, I think that's why ones. I liked
the,
it.
The
more.
Three girls were just amazing and their portrayal of friendship. But that girl, I'm gonna find her name because it's the girl who plays the young Christine Baranski is just like, please give her an Oscar or a Netflix series to headline because she is just fantastic. Oh, and there were so many random, like, hilarious quotes. Like, some of the dialogue, like, the writing was, like, very, like, funny and more natural than you'd expect.
Yeah. Her name is Jessica Keenan Wynn.
Yeah, Jessica Keenan Wynn is my new hero, basically. So she is just incredible in this movie as the young young Christine Baranski. And yeah, I would like a movie starring like Mamma Mia threequel starring just her. I don't know. She was,
they could do a young one. Oh, I'm sure they will, actually, after the success of, seems like box office, but definitely critic reviews of this movie.
I know. It's just hilarious.
What about this? I'm seeing a headline from Daily Mirror that says, Meryl Streep's joy at finding she's actually related to Mamma Mia co-star Lily James. What the actual
apparently
fuck?
Apparently they're ninth cousins or something.
Well, that's extended.
yeah. It's really random, but yeah. Mamma Mia, here we go again. A good time for all. Who could hate this? And Pierce Brosnan. I love that. Like, yeah, you say about Colin, and Colin is my favorite. You know, one of my favorites of life. But I love that Pierce Brosnan was like willing to like
play a major role in the movie. Like, he was there a lot.
Play a major role and like carry the like heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Like, of a lot of this movie. And that he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to throw my heart into like portraying my grief in Mamma Mia 2. Like, I was just like, yeah, awesome. And so that was really cool. And, you know, Amanda, I always love, and I feel like she's a very, yeah, very unusual actress who needs more opportunities. But it's nice that they all wanted to show up and make more Mamma Mia, you know?
What I did when I saw the first movie is I left wanting more Sophie because I felt, I mean, she has I Dreamed a Dream and Honey, Honey. Not I Dreamed a Dream. You guys know what I'm talking about, the opening song, I Have a Dream.
I have it, yeah.
Yes. I'm wondering, and I don't really care if it's spoiled, but I'm wondering then, if she has a larger role in the upcoming movie that I have yet to see.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So she sing more? Because, I mean, we had Les Mis, and I was like, maybe I didn't miss out on anything with her and Mamma Mia. She only got those two songs for a reason. But now I'm just like, okay. Well,
I mean, she has a sequel, light,
maybe we can try
a light voice, but Sophie is the main character in the movie.
Yeah.
Aside from, she was too
in Mamma Mia 1, but she just didn't. If Meryl's in the movie, she's going to sing the majority of it. Sure, that's the Broadway show as well, of course. That's just the way it's going to go. Yeah, so that's where I'm like, okay, with new material.
She does not sing that much.
Right, because I was wondering then with.
In either. She doesn't sing that much.
Sophie is the main character, but I don't really attribute, the singing to. Like the singing versus the character work, but Sophie is the main character for sure.
Yeah, definitely not the first Broadway show at all that seems to have a main character that sings almost the least out of the entire cast.
Well, that's kind of like what you have the ensemble for, or dance as well. Like it's like you got your lead actor, and then if they're not the most skilled like dancer or singer, you have the ensemble like do the heavy lifting, like. Jeremy Jordan doesn't really dance that much in Newsies. Everyone else just dances around him, you know, right.
And you almost like forget that he doesn't dance when you're watching.
Yeah, because it's like, he's still amazing. But anyway, it's a good movie. You'll like the movie, Mitch. Do you know any spoilers?
Only what we've talked about
here anyway.
Pardon?
I said I don't think we should say him on here anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, I feel like Mitch is, if Mitch doesn't know some spoilers, I feel like he's going to be, like, very shocked when he sees the movie.
Let's just leave it
at that. That's fine. Yeah.
So much fun. I'm excited. Okay. No, I only knew what you guys were talking about, which I don't care, but I thought was spoilery enough, so I can only wonder what I don't know that's going to be
that shocking to me. Fair enough. Okay, so moving on, I'm going to take the next one, I think. So, yeah, Mamma Mia 2 is one of the things that since my vacation has ended has helped, like, make me feel calm and happy and all of the things that I should have been feeling on my vacation. The other one is returning to my new favorite show of all time, which is called Schitt's Creek. And I genuinely, while I was away, like, found myself, like, missing this show, even though there were no new episodes coming out. I was just in the middle of a rewatch, and I was like, I didn't have time to sort of continue that for my self-care, but I was like, oh, my God, I cannot wait to go home when all I get to do is just care about Schitt's Creek, which I don't know if either of you have seen this show or heard of it or anything like that.
No, actually, I'm surprised I haven't.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it, though.
Okay. So it's a Canadian broadcast comedy, not a sitcom. It's a scripted, like, single-camera comedy filmed on location in a small town. It's about a rich family who, because of the fraud of one of their accountants or something like that. Like, they are the victims of a huge amount of fraud, which means they become, like, penniless. Like, they're basically, like, the IRS audits them and they lose most of their stuff and wealth and life because of they get fucked over. And one of the assets that they're allowed to retain, because the IRS has no value for it, is they own the deed to a small town called Schitt's Creek. So, like, we're saying, like, S-C-H-I-T-T-S, like the name Schitt's Creek, the father bought the son as a birthday gift as a joke, like, hey, you own, you know, you're up Schitt's Creek, you know. So it's an adult family, like two parents in their 60s and children in their late 20s and early 30s who are all used to this very rich lifestyle, and they have to basically go and live in this small town that they own the deed from, where they have the right to, like, some free accommodation in the motel. And it's basically a series about that. It's a series about them having that culture shock, going to a small town and living there and adapting to that life and you know, and about their family and the people they meet. And it sounds like very cliche, but it is one of the greatest, like, character-driven comedies I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, on the surface level, there's a fair bit of farce. Like, there's a fair bit of, like, jokes about, like, you know, that, oh, culture shock because this person's so privileged. But it is so much deeper than that in how these issues are presented for the individual characters. The leads are Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, who are obviously pretty old school comedy legends. And it is created and produced and written and showrun by Dan Levy, who is the son of Eugene Levy. And it's the first thing that he ever brought to his father and was like, do you want to actually work with me? Because he'd spent his whole career trying to, like, not necessarily, like, be associated with that. Like, people didn't really know they were father and son. He had, like, a separate, totally separate career. And it is just such a beautiful show, and it's so funny and so, like, fulfilling. And it has, like, both of the children have, like, unbelievably severe anxiety that presents in, like, really different ways, and it's a really interesting deconstruction of, like, what is a joke about privilege, like, what is a joke about, like, oh, you don't know how to do that because you are rich and never had to do that, and what is a joke about, or a real exploration of, like, a deep personality trait that's actually not related to the privilege at all. And I just love it so much, and I missed it so much while I was away, and it has such great, yeah, just such great exploration, such great development of characters that look like a joke at first it like hits you hard. And yeah, so Dustin Milligan, Brittany, who was Friedkin in Dirk Gently, mm-hmm. he's one of the leads, not in the family. He's one of the leads of the people they meet in the town. And that kid is a freaking, he is a powerhouse. Like, he has taken these two very different characters of Friedkin and then Ted, the character he plays in Schitt's Creek, and they both look on the surface like a completely ridiculous joke character, and he finds some deep shit in both of them. Like, it's pretty incredible. I'm really impressed by him, but my favorite character is the one played by Dan Levy, who's the showrunner as well, who is this character who originally he reads as like a camp gay man, mm-hmm. and Dan is a camp gay man, but there is more, the character is a bit more complex than that in terms of representation and sexuality. But he's also like a character that was just like, the way that his like neurosis about the world are portrayed, I have like never, ever, ever, ever felt closer to a fictional character than I do to this character and the way that he internalizes things and stuff. So it's a lot, but it's a beautiful show. And it, for some reason, like, it's becoming very popular right now. Like, I found out about it a couple of months ago from some people I know that are in the Canadian TV world, like actors that I know from Supernatural and stuff. And like, Supernatural has a lot of Canadian, a lot of their smaller actors are Canadian because they film in Canada and cast in Canada. So I heard about it from them, but I think maybe because the fourth season, which only aired in the beginning of 2018, features a very prominent queer relationship, that maybe I'm, you know, heard about it from like gay Twitter, etc. Mm-hmm. But it's four seasons in. It's got a fifth one coming, and it's on like worldwide Netflix. It airs on the CBC, I think, or one of those Canadian channels in Canada, but it's worldwide Netflix. But for some reason, it's one of those like sleeper hits that has been successfully producing television for like 4 years. But like right now, a lot of people are jumping on it and talking about it. And I just feel very close to this show. It's the first show that I ever, well, that in a long time I watched the whole thing, and then I start rewatching it from scratch immediately. And I cannot recommend it enough. Mitch, you will really like some of the characters. And Brittany, I think you will really like a lot of the characters as well.
I'm literally adding it to my Netflix queue.
And I was just shocked when I was traveling. I'm like, I miss it. Like, I was like, I want to, like, even though I've seen every episode, I'm like, I miss it. I want to go and watch it again, like, immediately. While I was away, I'm like, I don't get to like dive back into that right now. I have to do all of these other things. And it was like, I was like, I just want to go back and relax in that. And it was interesting because I've just started rewatching the second season with Leo, who hadn't seen it at all. So I'm showing it to her for the first time. And there was like an incident in that season with like David, the character that I like the best, that I'm like, oh, didn't catch that the first time around. But that is literally very deeply an experience that I actually just had while I was away, in terms of like how I reacted to being asked to do a certain thing. And anyway, long story, this character is my soulmate, even though his packaging is like not at all like mine. Like, not, there's a lot of the stuff about him that a shallower read would attribute to him being like really camp or like prissy is not that. It's a deep neurosis that is so similar to mine that it hurts. But I love it so much. So it's definitely the show that I will now and forever be pointing people at, in terms of, I'm like, this is why I'm a nightmare. Like, this like, what, watch him, and if you get him, you get me, like, in terms of the kind of like, yeah, hang-ups that he has and his behavior, like even little things. And anyway, but even outside of that, even if I didn't have that personal relation, like recognizing the work done in the various characters, because there's another character that has like, again, very deep like blend of like societal behavior and personality not personality problems, but like personal issues blending with societal behavior that is hard to pick apart, that is very cleverly done, which I don't relate to, but I recognize the deep work done with it. So it's a brilliant show and I love it and you should watch it. But if you don't like it, don't tell me, because then you probably hate me. So it's fine. But yeah, but I was just shocked at how much I missed it. So I just want to make sure everyone knows about it and loves it and watches it in a way that is supporting of it, which at the moment is pretty much on every Netflix in the world except for Canadian. Like it's officially on Netflix everywhere, and then Canada has it on their like free-to-air television. So I love it so much. And a very emotional experience with Dan Levy on Twitter when I told him about my feelings, and he started replying to me and I liking every tweet that I made, even ones that he wasn't tagged in. And so like I wasn't sure if my read on this character was like really conjecture, like projection, but like the fact that he wrote that character for himself and that it's so deep and personal for him and that he was approving what I was saying, I was kind of like, okay, like I have got this right. And so therefore it means a lot more to me, and I like burst into tears. But anyway, let's not talk about that anymore. So yeah, that's my wholehearted, purest love at the moment. And I'm so grateful for it. And it always surprises me like to find things that like you think you're done. You think you love things as much as you can possibly love them. And then there's always like more. There's always like room for more. And so that's really great. Stressful sometimes because it's like how many things can I love? But it's good though. Like it's good. Like just how far your heart can expand. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm in that like weird, it's in between shows that are not new right now, and like I have one or two shows that I watch weekly, and it's just like I keep thinking about shows I want to go back and rewatch that I've just been so connected to, but then like I don't want to go back into that wormhole. So it's like this feeling of like missing something so much, even though it's right at your fingertips and you could go back to it at any moment. But it just becomes a thing that could be all consuming at once. And yeah, it's just so much. So like when I was in Sweden, I had some downtime. Like it was annoying because Queer Eye was like, technically it was the day Queer Eye came out, like many, many hours before it was actually released. And I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting. But then I started like rewatching Dirk, and I'm like, no, I can't do this. I can't start this again. And so like I stopped myself. But it was just like, it's a weird time in between TV right now, for me at least. Like there's nothing really on. Like Elementary and The Bold Type are the only two shows I'm caught up on that are still currently airing new episodes. And then it's just a whole lot of nothing until like October. So
maybe we should start a book club. I don't know.
A book club, but for TV shows? Don't we already do that?
I suppose. I mean, it could also be a book club for books. Maybe we should. I don't know. Anyway,
we could read the book that Mitch is going to talk about the movie adaptation of.
Oh, I suppose that's true.
Ooh, yeah. So,
all right, let's go to Mitch.
That's my transition. Here it goes. Anyone who doesn't know Call Me By Your Name might know it, if anything, from something of an infamous peach scene, which we've decided we're not going to discuss. Look it up if you're really curious. Whatever.
I mean, you can discuss it. It's fine.
Is it okay?
Do whatever you want.
It's basically just one of the emotional climaxes of the movie happens surrounding around a character using a peach for, like, pretending it's, like, a sexual object. And I don't want to spoil it, so like I don't know what more can
Mitch,
say.
Mitch, it was nominated for Best Picture. Everyone's seen it. You're the last person to see it.
I'm the last person on planet Earth. Well,
you're the
last
person, and I think you misinterpreted the hype about the peach scene.
Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm fine if I missed it, because I felt it in my own way. I loved it. Peach scene led up to winter scene, so if I'm talking just about my hype of it being the emotional significance it had to me, Peach scene was really significant to me. And it just, it related to kind of just what I'm going through in my personal life, unfortunately, of like, I don't want you to go. And it's the very brisk turn of events from, I'm embarrassed, I don't want you to go, now let's bang. Because like, same. It's just, it's, that's how relationships work. It's Natalie, it's a, this is a deep cut, so you're not going to remember it. If you do, wow. We talked about kind of like a way that relationship works in Glee, Clayne. I was like, why are they arguing about the towel? But you were like, Mitch, they're not arguing about the towel. The relationship is the issue. The towel is just the start of the argument. And it's just what they're going to keep going to, but it means so much more. That's the kind of deepness I felt here that Glee never could reach in a gay relationship. Something I've been needing for a while. Something that feels so real, feels so amazing, and feels so guttural. So I don't know if this is too far of me to say, but it kind of surprises me that neither actor is gay, because it comes off as too authentic to not feel like they're literally in love with each other. I don't know how else to interpret it. It's not even just like acting at this point. It feels authentic.
Yeah, that's, you are not wrong. Timmy especially is, his performance in this movie is one of the most naturalistic performances I've ever seen in my life from any actor. Like, he is very, like, the way his full body, like the way that he like moves, the way that he like, even the way they hug and kiss, like the way that he'll like drag his head over his chest and stuff like that is like, it's real. Like, and I think that that is something that the guys went through when they made the movie. It was like made in a short period of time in like a bubble, and they have a really amazing connection like in real life. And I think that it is not necessarily that they're in love with each other, but it is a truly organic, like it's pulled from a deeper place than most performances. And I definitely felt that. I was shocked when I watched it as well. I wanted to see it, I wanted to see it, and I ended up going and seeing it by myself when it was in the cinema. And this was so long ago. And I was just really shocked by how it felt. And by, at first, it's like very disjointed. Like it's like all of these things are just happening. Like there's not a through line of story exactly. It's just a perspective shift. And then I was like, oh, like this is so immersive. This is taking you, the viewer, with the characters, especially with Elio, taking you like as in, it's not just you're watching stuff happen to it, you're feeling it happen to him, because like you don't really see it through an objective lens. Like you don't see it through the view of both of them, or from an objective viewer point. Like it's like all of this behavior in when it starts with Oliver is like, you don't know how to interpret it as the viewer, because Elio doesn't know how to interpret it. So like the lens that you're seeing the actions through is not objective. And then once they sort of understand each other, then it feels more like a normal narrative, because you're actually seeing, like you're having things spelled out because they are spelling things out to each other.
Which is not all the way until the end trip, in my opinion. I don't feel like they get each other until they're all of the way there.
I think after they get together.
Well, I can't say that, Natalie, because I don't know how else to say this, but to be like somewhat explicit, but there's like the fake blowjob scene where he's
that's,
so that's where I'm like, he's teasing him still. And that's where I don't like them in the relationship, but I ship them. It's hard. It's so hard, because I don't like the fact that I feel in the end that Elio's being taken advantage of to some effect, to the point of,
no, that's, I didn't that, mean, that's not what I got from the blowjob at all. Like the fake blowjob,
that's where I felt it.
The fake blowjob was Oliver checking that he himself wasn't being a creep.
How do you mean?
I don't know. Brittany, what do you think?
I'm more leaning on Natalie's side, but did either of you read the book?
I haven't read it, no.
I'm saving myself from the emotional trauma, because I won't survive it.
So I read it in the book. I read it more of what Natalie is saying, but I think seeing it, it's something different. But I think it goes along with you're following Elio through all of this. And so when
he doesn't know what it means. Exactly. And the movie shows you that he doesn't know what it means.
And it's not necessarily uncomfortable in the movie. I didn't get that vibe. It's more of like, I don't know what to do with this information.
There is not a single moment in that movie that I thought Elio was being taken advantage of at all. He has all the power in that relationship. Mm-hmm. All of it.
I feel that there's a struggle and there's a balance between both of them. They both take over from other. I don't think anyone could have independently had it, because I do think Elio needed to get the answer of the midnight. And that's the other part that really disturbs me. It's that he has to wait till the midnight, and it's not for lack of letting people know. Like, it's not even a secret thing. Everybody knows they're banging. Everybody.
No, Elio doesn't know that everyone knows. That's the thing. He doesn't know that everyone knows. And it's like, well, we've gone like really deep dive with this. Like, this is a whole like other. Yeah. My take is that Oliver is aware that he's in a position of extreme power because of his age, but that he doesn't really feel like he has the emotional power. And that all of the stuff that he's doing is that's the thing. That switch of the no, meet me at midnight, and then the emotional switch there is Elio having all of this, oh, he's fucking with me, he's playing with me, like he's stringing me along, like I'm the little victim. And then you realize, and Elio realizes, that it's like Oliver trying to restrain himself, that he's trying to do the right thing by Elio, and that he's getting all of these signs of consent from Elio, that he's like, all of these different things, like, we're 100% sure that you're in for this? Okay, but are we 100% sure? Are you 100% sure? And that's what Oliver, to me, is doing through all those scenes. It's not him exerting power. It's him giving power to Elio. It's him giving him an out on so many occasions. And then when Elio's like, no, I want it. No, I want it. No, I want it. And then Oliver's like, fuck, yeah, okay. I definitely want it, but I need you to prove that I'm not using you. And that's what it is to me.
I think I'm seeing the point between what you and Brittany are both saying. The book might present it that way very clearly. It's not the same with the fact that Army is not.
I haven't read the book, that's fine.
But coming to my own conclusion of how I feel this way.
Yeah.
Army is playing younger than he is. If he was purely as I would imagine him in the book to be in his mid 20s, I would feel innately different, but Army is not. And that has more of an unspoken power that can't come out from any other body language. It's going to come out in a pure judgment form. And that's where I'm feeling.
I don't know. I have to watch it again, but Timmy's also not really as young as he's in playing in the movie.
Well, he looks 17. That's the thing. But Army does not look like 25.
I don't know. I found it, you know, it's a beautiful film. Like, it's a one-of-a-kind beautiful film.
It really is.
I'm really excited that they want to make more, like, that they want to do, like, the Call Me By Your Name universe, basically. They want to do, like, 5 of them, like, meeting at different points in their life.
Is that the book?
The book goes further than – I know this – I haven't read the book, but I know it. The book goes further than the movie. The book, they meet again. And so the first movie would cover that. But I think that Luca, like the director, he wants them to have a happy ending. So I think he wants to do like 3, 4, 5 movies until they're at a point in their life where it can be fine.
Well, yes. That all makes a lot of sense. And that's relieving to hear, because I am legitimately traumatized.
It's pretty rough. Yeah.
It's really just, so there's a specific feeling I had during this that I knew how the movie ended. I knew how the movie went because I read it on Wikipedia because I wanted to see what I was getting into a year ago because I was like, the peach scene, I need to know now. Why is it happening? So what is it even? Because I heard it on Ellen. He was like, I'm not going to talk about the peach scene. And Ellen's like, no, don't talk about that. So it's pretty much dangling in front of my face at that point.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. So I don't blame myself at all from that. I felt like I went in the way I did. And then I read the Wikipedia and I was like, hell no, I'm not ready for that. For some reason, I kind of just decided I was. So it was just a night where I watched it all and I was just, the whole feeling of excitement that he has leading up to it, it's it's so like agonizing to feel that with him. And it's leading up to this, the final point I'll get to, because when he gives like this kind of puppy dog kiss, that's where I knew I was gripped in. It's the one where they're in the grassy area, it's their first kiss. That puppy dog kiss, I knew was meant to break me in half when I thought back to it, as soon as we finally get around to just the pure snow falling down, because, oh my freaking God, it's total heartbreak. There's no emotion left anymore. And that's when your body, in the way I reacted, in the way I can assume Elio would react, the character, you don't even feel the emotion. It's just leaking out of you. It's so thick and so heavy, even that long into the breakup, I guess, all the way to winter, that you're crying and you're almost wondering, why am I still crying at this? That's how I felt watching the movie. I felt legitimately like, as I was Elio, as soon as winter hit, I was out. I don't even really know exactly how it all went down with the phone call and everything, because I was so busy crying I couldn't really see. It was ugly sobbing. And that's where I wrote to you, Natalie. I was like, how is this movie allowed? I am just not in a good place. It's so rough. It's so rough. And it's amazing because it's rough. You're right, the most guttural, naturalistic performance I've seen of anyone, especially playing that age. It's so authentic. I wish there were words to describe, but like I said, I'm in the same mode of feeling like the emotions leak out of me. I don't really control them or understand them right now. That's still how I feel about this movie.
Yeah, it's definitely like, regardless of subject matter, it's the way the film was made, like the lens which you are looking at it through as a viewer, what they choose to like reveal to you and what they choose like it's confusing. Like the first part of the movie is confusing because you're like, I don't know like what's going on. I don't know like how this behavior should be interpreted. And then I realized that it was because it was so deeply with Elio, like it was so deeply through his lens, that they were not giving you any objective insight as a viewer outside of Elio. And that was really amazing to me. But then, yeah, Timmy's performance is unbelievable. And Army is one of my favorite people. Like, he's just becoming this beautiful, like, actor. He's been Army. It's always a really good sign of an actor, like a straight white male actor, being a freaking great guy. Look at who casts him. Army was cast in Sorry to Bother You by Boots Riley. So he was cast as like, he was playing like the douchebag white guy, but he was like cast because they knew that he was like in the message of the film, you know, like for that. He was cast in Straight White Men, which is currently on Broadway, which is like the first ever play by like an Asian American woman written on Broadway. Like, he was cast in J. Edgar as the lover of like the secret lover of like J. Edgar Hoover. I don't think he was the president. He was like the head of the FBI or whatever. And so Army is this amazing man who is like the, just the most incredible ally, like to every marginalized group. And it's like, he's a white guy that they know they can trust to be involved in these really sensitive issues. And I love everything that he's done, basically. I've loved him since the Winklevii. Like, I think he's hilarious.
Oh my God. My niece brought that up to me this weekend. She was like, and he was in The Social Network. Do you remember that? And I was like, oh my God, you're absolutely right.
You know, I'm 6'4", there's 200 pounds and there's two of me. Like, he's amazing. Like, Army is a great actor, but he's also like a great human being cast in these really sensitive parts by people who know that he is gonna get it, like that he can be a part of these really beautiful and important stories that don't necessarily like benefit him as like a straight white leading man, but that he can really be a great part of it. And I love him. Like, I think he's amazing. And Timmy should have got the Oscar. Like, I would have been very, very, very happy if he had got the Oscar for that, because he
I'm still in the dark. What happened? What was the end result? Who got what?
I think, did Gary Oldman get it for Darkest Hour?
Yeah.
Which is, it should have been, it should have been Timmy, or it should have been Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour. I don't know. It's, you know, it is what it is. But Timmy is, yeah, that performance is pretty incredible. And it's definitely something that is, yeah, regardless of subject matter, just a one-of-a-kind film that I wish wasn't one-of-a-kind. Like, I wish that more films were as evocative as Call Me By Your Name is. So,
and yeah, it's not even that. I mean, it's the biggest cherry on top that it's a gay movie. It's not what drew me in, because what drew me in was the strange emotion I sensed around it, the intensity that I felt from it from so afar, because I kept it afar because I knew how like potentially like mentally damaging this movie could be on me if I'd been too into it too soon to my own life, my own issues. So that's enough to, I think, draw anyone in. We all feel this certain magnetic thing going on with Timmy and Arnie. It's something so strong that it can transcend people who even care about gay pop culture or romance movies. It's something that I think it has a very strong power that it's good and it's heartbreaking, but that's good too. And that's why where it has to live in my hypes, because I could easily put that in a gripe that I hate feeling so heartbroken about a movie. But it's nowhere near just a movie. It's always going to feel like this was more of an experience. There's movies and there are experiences, and this is totally in that second category. It lives well outside of just, I viewed this, it's done, or whatever. I think I will remember every scene that happened in this movie, I hope, until the day I die, because I won't watch it again. I won't experience that again. That's rare for a movie I love as much as this. I just can't go into it again. I can't feel the same ways that I did. It was so intense and deep and beautiful. Amazing. I can't say enough for everything about the movie. And there's so much more about the cinematography, Natalie, that I could go on about that I won't.
Yeah, it's stunning. It's beautiful.
Everything movie. About the movie is really to the T perfect. I really I have to give one special shout out to the way that they played in with their love theme, kind of coming in and out whenever.
Oh, the music is another freaking podcast.
It's a whole beast.
Like, yeah, Sufjan is a miracle, and it's just So like the songs that he did for it, and the
when they're out in the town, and the song comes in and out, whenever Elio is able to kind of steal himself away and look at him.
Yeah.
Or whenever they're able to live together and be in a normal societized, I don't know how to say that word, thing, like riding a bike. Okay, now we can have it because we don't look gay together. We can just enjoy each other to the maximum pleasure because no one's going to judge it. So here's our love song. It speaks. The music has a whole other level to it that you won't even notice half the time because you don't have the capability, like the emotions are so full in your head, I'm sure, from what you're seeing on screen and hearing it. It's just supporting when it doesn't have to be. It could be its own thing, even. It could be like a whole Fantasia, the movie. It's amazing. This is just from one viewing, very exhausted. I turned this movie on at 1 a.m. I don't know why. Yeah. I have no explanation.
That's also a bad time to turn it on.
Oh, that's just happened. Mitch, why?
It just happened. I didn't mean to. It really was just, oh, okay, it's time to play this now. Like, I swear I had no control over any of this. It's an experience that I had, and I'm still reeling, and I don't think I'm ever going to not be. And I'm kind of okay with that. I feel like I'm Elio. I feel like I'm still there in the heartbreak with him, so I need a sequel, please. I just need, I don't know if I could experience this again, even in a sequel, though. I don't know if that's good for me, because it's so incredibly intense. I know I can't be the only one, even on this podcast, but let alone in this world that feels this way.
This movie has shaken a lot of people. And yes, there's the Peach hype drama, which is like, they were not even going to include that scene, Mitch. Like, they were going to be like, I don't think we can like do this. Like, it's not going to make any sense on film. And then both Luca and Timmy tried it in real life, and they were like, I tried it, it works. I think I know how we can shoot it.
Really?
Yeah, I think one of them, I think Luca tried it and was like, I tried it and it and it works. So I think we can do it. And Timmy was like, yeah, of course it works. I tried it as well.
And I mean, you need to, though. Like, how else can you understand?
I don't know.
The emotional complexity behind Peach Scene without getting there. Well, that's the
thing. It's like, I didn't even see it, like, is that big a deal? Like, I mean, it's whatever. Like, it's, I don't know. I feel like it's an example of sexuality that is, like, every single person is weirder than society has allowed us to publicly be. I think that's what it is more a representation of, that, like, every single person has done, like, something or felt something or thought something, like, way more unacceptable or bizarre than society has collectively agreed that we can admit to. And so that yes. I really love that when Oliver comes in and he was, you know, and Ilio's like having his crisis about it, and Oliver's like, I wish everyone was as sick as you, because because it's like it's so much less of an issue, like, in terms of the grander scheme of things and even in the context of the film than, you know, the controversy being made about it. Though I do like that they're, like, playing with, like, that as, like, the hype, you know, like, hype of it. Like, they're putting out, like, you know, like, they put out, like, a record, like, you know, like, the soundtrack on vinyl, and it's, like, a peach-scented, like, a peach-coloured and peach-scented,
oh,
like,
my rubber God. Vinyl.
Yeah, so they're, like, playing with it, but I do feel like...
I mean, it's a brand now, so...
Yeah, I don't know, it's a bit... whatever. But anyway, I don't know. Brittany, what were you talking about it with your 13-year-old child?
Oh,
well,
no.
So children these days, ages 12 to my age, are obsessed with Timothy and will watch him in every film he's in, no matter how inappropriate it is for their age group, including Call Me By Your Name.
How did they get their hands on it?
Because they have a phone in their hands and they can do anything. Mm. But it was a very intelligent conversation. It wasn't about the content. It was more about why she actually asked me, she was like, why don't these people do anything not produced or going to Sundance? I was like, because they don't have to. And they're better than big major blockbuster movies. She was more concerned that most of the movies coming out with him in it are not going to be wide released at first. So,
like The Beautiful Boy.
But that was how that conversation started. And, so they just love him. That's a thing that 13-year-old girls are into, is just Timothy.
It specifically, I mean, you're saying it's before Call Me By Your Name, but I'm wondering if this is a cultural shift into having young people being more obsessed about gay culture now that it's more mainstream than it was when I was a child. It feels like that has to have some influence over, like, relation or longing to feel like, oh, I wish I had this intensity that these gay men do on screen, or I wish I was them, or this is pleasing to the eye, or this is who I am, or something to that effect.
Well, I'm not sure a first birthday party was where my 13-year-old niece was going to have a conversation like that with me.
I'm not saying you would have to. As us discussing it to figure.
Yeah,
it out.
No. I don't know, but also, just so you know, we've been recording for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh my God! Okay, well, we're done. We're going to be done. Call Me By Your Name.
I just feel like that segue was going to open up a can of worms.
No, fair enough. Call Me By Your Name is a film that, you know, I saw when it came out, and I haven't really verbalized a lot of thoughts about. So, yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely a movie that, if you haven't seen, is worth seeing in a dark room by yourself.
Yeah, by yourself, definitely. I saw it by myself, too, when I first saw it.
Yeah.
You need to be able to be very comfortable to sob.
Not at 1 a.m., but like, no,
3 a.m.
No
by the time the movie ended.
I think, Mitch, what you said about, like, people being interested in gay culture, I don't know. I feel like this movie's not really like that. I feel like it's more that it's, like, showing a transcendence of experience. Like, I think it's showing a transcendence of love and experience in humanity. And, yes, it is a gay couple, But I think that's the entire point, is that what they experience is like on so many levels, like viewed as wrong in different ways, and that it's such a strong story about why it's right, regardless of any other confines. So yeah. I think that it is less about, a movie about gay people, and more about like, the transcendence of the human experience. So yeah, it's a very special movie. It's very hard to talk about, really. And
We could have easily, I know, as we're wrapping this up, talked about this for the entire 2 hours and 15 minutes.
I could have done a Call Me By Your Name episode where I had like everyone feasibly. Had a different hype about the movie and a different gripe about the movie or the surroundings of the movie. But
this late in the game even, yes.
I will continue to support everything that the people who made this movie make, not just because they're massively ridiculously talented, but also because they're good. They're good, and the movie is about things that are good and juxtaposing them against things that are normal. And so, yeah, it's good. All right.
Thank you for indulging me, everyone. I appreciate it.
I'm glad. I didn't know you hadn't seen it. I'm glad that you finally have. So.
Oh, on purpose. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. So how about we finish up with, okay, Mitch, does anyone have a quick two truths and a lie that they can share with us today? Okay.
So mine are all things that I'm pretty sure I've talked about on podcasts. So to that effect, I really don't have anything you guys don't know. I had to make it three truths and a twist. One of them has a twist that makes it no longer true.
Okay.
Or rejected information, I suppose. I don't know. I feel like I gave it away. We'll see. Okay, so yeah, my two truths and a lie is transforming, into three truths and one twist, because you guys know everything about me. I talk about everything on the podcasts. And I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going to be a little bit tougher, but that's on purpose because you know me so well. So I have my first truth as the fact that I sat down and ate chips that were randomly opened and left on a Universal Orlando table because I was hungry and they were there, so I ate them, and that was that. My second truth is the fact that I had once auditioned for the X Factor, and I obviously did not make it onto television. You would know about it. My third truth is the fact that I once drove from Denver to California in one shot, which was 14 hours at the time. And I believe Google Maps when it says it's now transformed into a 15 and a half hour long drive, because I'm sure the traffic has gotten that much worse going into Los Angeles. But one shot, just me, did it all on my own. So the twist? What is the twist?
I know you have to. I know the chips is true. And I know you've done some drives that have scared me. So it's, I don't know, maybe a different route, or I don't know, maybe it was American Idol, not X Factor. I don't know. Brittany? But I know the chips is true, so good for you, Mitch. Yeah.
I know. I feel like it's the drive, and he's going to be like, no, it's actually 14 hours. but I'm going to go with the X Factor one, that's a lie.
Okay, you guys both got it.
Yeah, I think I'll go for that too.
You guys definitely both got it. Because X Factor was something that I remember I tweeted out that I was going to do it, because I submitted a video, because you needed to, I think, for something of the auditions in Albany, and I was like, cool, let's do this. I didn't show up to the day of, because I woke up feeling very ill in the stomach and I decided not to do it. So I didn't audition for the X Factor. I'm going to say no, I really didn't, because I didn't really show up to the final singing live person. So yeah, so that's,
so you started an audition and you didn't started go an audition, through.
Didn't really finish. Oh, that was probably like one half of it. So I mean, like
I've
said,
heard you, like, I know you've done theater. I don't think I've ever heard you like actually full sing like well.
This
like
YouTube
trying.
Video, this YouTube video of me, we can link it. I don't care. It's a vlog. I did a vlog in it. I do have my singing part. 15 seconds of Just Haven't Met You Yet, by Michael Bublé, and it's not good, Natalie. Like I had since then matured as a singer and learned how to do. Like, I'm not amazing. I'm not professional, but I learned more proper techniques since then. It was the beginning of college. I had a really intensive musical study during college, so I became very in tune with tone and pitch and vibrato and all those good things. Yes, I did drive across the country. It did take 14 hours. First time I drank Red Bull in my life. Oh my God, I stopped in Las Vegas. And I just didn't know how to live. Denver to California is not suggested in one shot. Actually, I did it twice. Oh my God. We're just going to understand that I'm crazy when it comes to drives. We know that all. And yeah, the chips. I know I told that recently. I don't know where. Probably on this podcast. Or I don't even know, Natalie. You must have heard it somewhere that I was talking. So that was an unfortunate circumstance of me being once again very starved and not having any food around me that was very accessible. So I decided to eat those instead.
Fair enough. Don't judge me.
It's okay.
So quickly finishing up with a question of the day. This one's a write-in from me, myself, and I, because I haven't been on the social media recently, because we've all had some interesting times recently. So I figured that we'd just have a little bit of a squee and a humble brag. So my question is, tell the class about a meaningful experience you had recently as a fan, because we've all had some wackadoo ones. So, Mitch, do you want to go first?
I was lucky enough to meet Taylor Swift, and I got a picture and a signed autograph from her. And I could just say that I know what she smells like, and I now will get her perfume so that I can remember the moment.
Wow. Yeah. And so at your concert, that was a thing that...
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of rumblings about this since their tour has started, like that people get selected for this meet and greet, and I have no idea how that works, but apparently Mitch was chosen, capital C chosen.
Oh, no, it was my best friend, Brittany. I was just lucky enough to go along. I was the plus one. It's a lot of hard work to get into there. You have to just get noticed, so... Good on high school, Brittany, for getting there.
Fair enough. Yeah, that is a wild story. Yeah, cool. That's nice. Oh, Taylor, you have a strange life. Strange life it is that Taylor Swift leads. Anyway, do you want to go next, Brittany, or shall I?
I can go next. Yeah. So... my favorite Broadway person, who Natalie introduced me to,
accidentally.
Well, I mean, full disclosure, I've seen Andy Carlisle on Broadway before, but Groundhog Day changed my life. So
yeah,
Andy Carlisle is back on Broadway, and I went to go see Pretty Woman 2 days ago. They're just wrapping up, or they wrapped up today, their first week of previews. Full week. And so I went on Friday night and I felt like I had waited years. I was like, oh my God, I'm so late to see the show. And my mom on the phone with me was literally like, Brittany, they've performed the show 5 times. You're not late. So I went and I saw it. And so in Groundhog Day, Phil Connors is very buttoned up in his suits and he gets dressed a lot. And in Pretty Woman, he gets undressed a lot. And there was a lot of one of the things that just makes my head spin with any character ever is when they unbutton their sleeves and then roll their sleeves up. And Andy Carl does that in every scene that he is in this musical.
Oh no.
And it's a lot for me to handle. And yeah,
men's forearms are very annoying. I don't know why that's such a thing. Like a shoved up to the, like a button-down shirt shoved up to the elbows is why is that so problematic? Like, why is that such a thing?
It was a lot for me to handle, and there's a lot of it in the play, in the musical. But then I did get to meet him afterwards again, and it's one of the best pictures I have. And I didn't even post it anywhere. My first thing was open text send to Nat.
Yeah. And does Andy Carl know you from seeing Groundhog Day 7 times? Or
no, he does not. What? Thank God.
Yeah. but then like, yeah, it's talking, me again.
I was talking to Orfe, his wife, and who is also in the musical, and I said, I was like, Orfe, you are amazing. And she's like, I cannot believe you pronounced my name. I love it so much. And I was just like, Orfe, come on. Like, I know how to pronounce your name. And it was a lot. She's so wonderful and talented.
How many times are you going to see the show?
Honestly, I don't know, because I came home and I looked at tickets and it is like sold out almost through October.
Really?
With like, wow. So it's not sold out, but I want to sit now that I'm
at the front.
Yeah. So like I sat in the mezzanine and it was perfect. Like I had an amazing view and the theater is very small. But I know exactly what seat I want now for, like, you know, a second performance, and I cannot get it through October.
You mean, like, somewhere you can see, like, the sweat drip or something?
Yeah, no, I perfectly mapped out everywhere he's going to be. So I know exactly
the seat
I
normal. Want. This is normal. This is so normal.
Well, yeah. It is, in a way.
Yeah.
So it is for me, and I... The thing with
like Groundhog, you've worked out the staging and you're, yeah, like, I want to be close when, yeah, so this happens.
The thing
happens
with Groundhog Day was it wasn't popular, and so the tickets were available and for pretty cheap. Like, even if you entered the lottery and lost, they gave you a discounted ticket, and the discounted tickets you could choose from literally the front row center. Mm. So, like, I always sat in a good seat for Groundhog Day. But because that's just what was available. But this, I cannot. The seats, like the three seats I'm looking at, are not available through October.
I'm so shocked it's so popular. I mean, not shocked, but like Pretty Woman was a popular movie and Groundhog Day was a popular movie. Like, why is this like so? Yeah,
I don't know. So my dad wants to go for his birthday, which is next week. And so I got them tickets for September. And they don't mind sitting in the mezzanine. Like, there are rear mez seats, like, that are available. And I sat, like, mid-mez, and it was – the view was perfect. Like, it was – I would have no problem sitting in the mezzanine again, and I probably will for a third viewing. But, like, now it's like my great white whale is getting this ticket that I – like, I just – it's unavailable. So –
I just saw Pretty Woman for the first time, and now I understand the strict difference between that and Miss Congeniality, Natalie, so keep going.
Well, that's something.
Those are not the same movie.
I know they're not. I know they're not. But at one point, imagine? I definitely thought they did. They were.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. Okay. They're definitely,
I mean, we're undercover. We're dressing a lot. Like, we have a lot of pretty clothes and makeup and hair and everything.
But we're not undercover.
Pretty Woman isn't her being undercover, I guess. Like,
she's like undercover-ish. She's like, oh, gotta hide my dress. I'm in the hotel now.
Yeah, but she's like pretending, like, not to be
a, not pretending. Yeah, yeah. Well, public, I'm, I guess. I kind of, because she's like, he's my uncle-ish. I don't know. It was a bad comparison back then. It still is now.
No, fair enough. I mean, yeah. Miss Congeniality, the musical, would be an interesting.
Oh my god!
It seems like the natural next step.
Anyway, yeah, so I had an interesting time in LA and San Diego, as I always do. Like, you always, like, have a lot of people, like, in a very small space who are usually lots of them making things that you like. But I had a really unexpected fan run-in in LA because I saw Darren Criss, who, if you're familiar with me, know my history with him. And it was really cool because I saw and met lots of people I was really excited to see and meet, like the people from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and them at Comic-Con and One Day at a Time was like amazing and stuff like that. But Darren is like a very special and regular kind of recurring character in my life. And I was at a record release show for a girl who's on Supernatural called Brianna Buckmaster. She had a record release show at the Hotel Cafe. She, did a beautiful concert there. And my friend Kim, who's also on the show, was there. And, like, it was really nice. And, like, you know, lots of Supernatural fans who were really supportive of, like, Wayward Sisters and stuff like that. So that was great. And that was over by, like, 10. And it was a Monday night. And literally across the street from Hotel Cafe is a little bar called Tramp Stamp Granny's, which I know and knew, like, it wasn't like, oh, I've stumbled into this, is owned by Darren's fiance Mia, So she runs this bar in Hollywood, and it's like a little low-key kind of kitschy little bar. And they were open like after the show. It was like Monday night, and they were open, and they were like on the door. They had like $7 queer cabaret, like people, you know, doing in drag and doing songs. It's a piano bar, so like just people sitting at the piano and like doing different songs and stuff like that. And I was like, I've seen pictures of this. It looks really cool. Like, I, you know, it's really cool that they're making this place. And I like queer cabaret. I like all of these things. Across the street, same block, we walk in, and it's tiny. And the first person I see is Darren. And I was like, I did not think that he was going to be there, mainly because I'd just seen pictures on the internet that he was in Aspen on the weekend. And like, this was the Monday. And so I was like, okay, like, this is not why I came here, but hi. But it was really nice. Like, it was like really, really low key. They do great. Like, the music was great. Like, they were just doing little half hour sets. Like, there was one at 8, one at 10, and one at 11. And we went in for the 11. It's not a big place. I walked in the door, and there's like a drag queen singing. And I look up, and at the end of the bar is Darren, and we make eye contact. And I'm like, oh, hi. But it was really nice. And he came over and he like gave us a hug, gave Leo a hug. He knows her as well. And we just watched the show. There was, you know, it was not a big thing. Like, everyone there was like a regular, I guess, who'd like, you know, most of the people like knew Darren and Mia, like not in a fan way. They were like people in their community, just hanging out. And the staff were really nice. The place is really welcoming and comforting. Like, it's a really funny little chill, kitschy place. It's like not glamorous. It's like really cute. And yeah, it was just a really nice night. Like, yeah, I came and gave him a hug, and I was kind of like, oh, like shit, like congratulations. Like, kind of like, how is this your life? Because he got, you know, he's just been nominated for the Emmy for like best actor for Versace. And like, kind of putting that math together in front of him was like a bit weird, but it was like, it was fine. And then it was a really nice club. And I've seen since then, like online, like they've been doing more like sing-alongs. Like, they're only sort of been open for a couple of months, and they've been doing more sing-alongs. And he was like, I'm here. I was like, I didn't think you were going to be here. And he's like, yeah, I'm here every night. And I was like, okay. And he was like, come by anytime you're in LA, I will be here. And I was like, okay. So yeah, and I've seen a few more videos since then of like, this was a queer cabaret, so he wasn't performing or anything like that, but like other nights he'll just like sit around playing the piano, and like, I'm just like, oh, this is like what your life is like now. Okay, this is fine. But it was really nice, and I was very slightly drunk by the end of it, because they had some stiff drinks at Tramp Stamp Granny's. And there was really beautiful, you know, performances, these queer performances, a couple of drag queens, like a lesbian poet and stuff like that. And they were just addressing some stuff that was really touching. And I'd just seen John Cameron Mitchell do like a Hedwig show. And obviously, like, Darren had been on my mind a lot since then, because I saw him do Hedwig as well. And it was like a really weird moment, and Australia had all of those issues with like the marriage equality vote, and I was like talking to a couple of people at the bar about that, and like about the welcomingness of the space that they're operating and this show. And it was just, even if he hadn't been there, it would have been like such a relief, like stress-free moment. It was one of the happiest moments of my trip outside the dead guy. You know, like, it was a big relief from the dead guy, but it was also like a big relief for like being in that very gay and happy space, and kind of reflecting on, like, especially in Australia, like what that's been like this year.
But sort of, yeah, like this podcast, a very happy gay place.
Yeah, but I missed Darren. Darren played a show in Australia while I was traveling, like a couple of months ago, and I didn't see him play in Sydney the first time. And yeah, so he's been on my mind a lot recently. And then I just walked into him basically in a space that, yes, he has an association with, but I literally thought he was in a different city. So it's not the first time I've randomly walked into Darren either. Like, I walked into him at Comic-Con. I walked into him in the middle of Dublin, like when he was there for the Glee show and I was going to see the Glee show, but like walked into him accidentally in the city. And I don't know, it's weird, but the fan aspect was kind of like, yeah, I got a little bit drunk. And like, as we were leaving, I was like, I just want to say to you, like a long time ago, and this is actually like in Dublin, like how long ago that was, like, it was like a really long time ago. You said to me something that stuck with me like so strongly in my experience, like as a fan, like not just of you, but of anything. Like you're such a, like a rewarding person to be a fan of. You said this thing to me and it sort of stuck with me, and like, thank you for saying it. I was kind of like a little bit drunk and he was like so nice about it. But he said like to me a very long time ago, like I was kind of like getting very flustered. I was like, I'm so sorry like to bother you. Like, I'm so sorry if this is weird. I was like, because I made him like at an event that I knew I was going to see him at, I made him like a mix CD of like covers that like he loves a good cover, obviously, even pre-Glee. It was kind of known for it. And I made him a mix CD of like my favorite cover songs of like different artists that just I thought he might enjoy. And I was kind of like, when I bumped into him randomly the first time, I was just like apologizing for like my behavior in the previous time, like of being like, oh, I'm sorry if that was like too weird, or like, you know, I'm sorry, like I wouldn't usually do that. And he was like, he said, and he kind of gave me, he was like, don't worry. He was like, you don't have to qualify yourself to me. And that has stuck with me, like just in terms of owning your shit and like owning what you care about and it being a good thing. It's really stuck with me since that happened. And so I got like mildly drunk. Sure. And I was like, you said this to me once, and it's like really like, it's like one of the most like life changing things anyone has ever said to me. And like you being in that position, and I'm really proud of you. And like, you're such a rewarding person to like be a fan of, like, and to watch and stuff like that. But like you said this and it really like changed my life. And so, yeah, that was really nice. And he was really cute about it. And like, he was basically like, he was like, don't be a stranger. Like, he was like, do you live in LA now? And I'm like, no, this is like such a weird coincidence.
Like, I mean, yes, but no.
I'm like, no, I don't. But this is a very weird thing. But he was like, well, just come by. Like, just whenever, like, I'll be here. Like, if I'm in town, I'm here every night. And so I was like, okay. So I guess like, if you're not creepy and you're over 21 and you want to be nice to Darren Criss, you can check out Tramp Stamp Grannies, and they have a lot of great performances, and it's a really beautiful little happy little bar in Hollywood. That was a very weird situation of like, you know, like 75% fate in terms of me being at that other show and the bar being right there, because I didn't really know where it was before then. But yeah, that was a weird time. That's the thing. He's consistently just so great, and he's so fun and bitchy and funny, and he's done such great things, and yeah, he's just so kind and nice, and like he always remembers my name and he always remembers Leo. It was so random and so like blessed, like really nice, and yeah. So that happened. So Darren's well, everyone who's been wondering. That was so
This has been a never-ending saga, seeing you see him.
Yeah, and Mitch knows. That's the thing. Mitch is like, yeah, I'm like, saw Darren again. Because, of course, I've paid.
I go, how is he? Because, like, at this point.
Yeah, I've paid to see him at many performances, you know, like Broadway shows and stuff like that, you know, like concerts. I've planned to see him many times, but I've also bumped into him a stupid amount of times that is unbelievable even to me. And so I saw him and I'm just like, of course, like, of like, yeah, like it's not like the most alien place for him to be, but I also thought like, cause he's quite a big celebrity now, that he wouldn't be in a place that he was known to like have a hand in. Like if you like kind of own a bar as a vanity project or something like that, like not that he, not it is me as actual place, but like if you own a place like Jared Padalecki co-owns a bar in Austin. He doesn't like hang out there every day being like, this is where I hang out. Like it's just like something he has a hand in. And so I thought like Darren is a relatively big celebrity would like not put himself in a place where he was easy to find, if that makes sense. But no, apparently that's not what the vibe is, but it's a beautiful bar and it's just so, yeah, it's so cool. And I think more fans are going there now because I've seen a few, like I'd never seen videos of him there before or anything. And in the last couple of days I've seen like he's been hanging out there and people have been posting like Instagram videos of like him, oh, walked into the bar and Darren Criss is singing along on a piano. So apparently this is a thing. So that happened. okay, we're going to finish now and sign off and let Brittany go to sleep. So thank you for joining us. And this has been way too long. Clearly, we need to do this much more often for shorter amounts of time. Sure. So
the longer we go, the longer the episodes are, like the longer we haven't talked to each other.
That's true.
There's just too much catching up to do.
That's true. We can try and do every 2 weeks. I try to do once a month, but we can try and do every 2 weeks now that it's not like fall TV season. But yeah. Okay. So who wants to do the high conclusion to finish us out for the night?
Brittany, I wrote this with your voice in mind.
Oh, okay. So to close out our, I love how this is called the traditional, not about the weather haiku. Okay, so to close the traditional, not about the weather haiku, Buffy's back again, along with Mamma Mia. Winter is so sad.
Yay! Thanks, guys. I hope you had fun.
I did. It was great.
I did, sorry. Too.
Sorry to keep you up. I didn't think it would be that long.
It's just a school night. Otherwise, it would be fine.
It was very gay, very Broadway, all of the things that we need. Very musical, just everything. Wow. We did it.